Thank you, Steve.
You gotta turn the button on. Nah. You usually handle your own button.
I usually do handle my own button. Today I wanted to...
You want me to do it?
Yeah, I'm...
You want me to feed you grapes, too?
I want to ease into the week. Hi, everybody. It's us. It's Bill and Wendy. We're thrilled that you're listening. It's the Monday edition of our program. We're at 312-981-7200. It should be a good one. That's all I can say right now.
Wow, we have a program.
We have a program.
A program.
It's in a... Yeah, it's a program. It's, you know, yesterday, if you're a sports fanatic, it was not a good day. We're so used to having the Blackhawks win, especially when they're in the lead in the third period, and the Cubs and the White Sox, and at home in a crucial game, and the Cubs and the White Sox have been off to such a great start that to have the Blackhawks and the Cubs and the White Sox all lose on the same day was not in our best interest, especially not on a beautiful sunny Sunday.
You know what? Get it out of the way. This is the one time that all three are going to lose. Be optimistic.
I hope so. If that's the case, I'll take one for the team and lose yesterday through all across the board. You attended the game yesterday. What was the mood there at the United Center?
It was amped up, and you know we score first, and everybody is feeling comfortable.
Sure.
Don't feel comfortable.
Well, the first few minutes, the Blues just—it was three penalties in the first several minutes there, and we scored on one of them. But scoring on a second and even third would have made things a little bit happier, I think, in retrospect.
When it was 2-1, I said to my son, Dylan, we got to get two. We need a buffer. Yeah. We need to get two. And yeah. He's like, why are you hell-bent on two? And I said, because you got to get up by two.
Just in case. And in case there's a fluke.
It would have helped.
Yeah, I know. I know, I know. Now, do you think, I don't know if you read any of this, but I read it and then I listened to the audio of this. The St. Louis Blues coach, Ken Hitchcock, has suggested, I'm trying to think if I can say more than suggested by based on what he said, but he has kind of postulated the theory that the Blackhawks get a little bit more...
Favoritism?
Yeah, because the NHL wants to see the Blackhawks go all the way. So do you think that's the case?
I know the play in question where one of the skaters' skates was not past the blue line before mm-hmm. the puck.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm thinking as I'm watching the game, this wasn't last night's game. Mm-hmm. It was Wednesday's.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, who's going to notice that? But we have a video guy who, is it Meacham? Matt Meacham, I think. He's there, and he looks... at the video screen, and
right.
he analyzes everything, and I'm thinking, wow, what a great catch.
Right. That saved a goal and possibly even the game. Then.
Right.
Yeah.
So, of course, the other team is going to cry foul.
Well, I think above and beyond that play, I think he was just suggesting that overall that the Blackhawks get some sort of favorite treatment because they're three-time champions and because it's better. I have to say... If you are the NHL and you're looking for your marquee matchups for the finals, the Blackhawks are going to generate a lot more interest than a lot of the other teams. So although they wouldn't mind the Blackhawks going to the finals, the question is whether or not they're giving them calls, close calls.
No way.
I wonder, you know, in every sport, there's certain players that are the stars of the game, and there's no question in my mind that those guys, if you're a pitcher and you're one of the marquee players, you get the strike zone. If there's a borderline call, you get the strike zone. If you're one of the marquee basketball players, they might call a foul on a guy who's all over you a lot more easily because you're one of the best players in the game. There's no question about it that the better players get slightly preferential treatment, but does a whole team get preferential
no,
treatment?
There is absolutely no way. I mean, really, I watched this video, and then on all over the weekend, Facebook, people were reposting things.
Yeah.
And I said to Jim as we were watching the game, boy, you know, this is going pretty quickly. There aren't that. This, again, isn't last night's game. It's going pretty quickly. They're not stopping. The refs are letting them play. And as soon as we said that, then that happened.
Right.
The coaches contesting, Coach Q was contesting that one issue over the blue line.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, oh, my God, talk about nitpicking. And my husband says to me, Wendy, it's the playoffs.
But I think, like, if I were a St. Louis Blues fan and I watched the game the other night where one of their goals got called back and then several minutes later the Blackhawks had a goal that was semi-questionable, the Andrew Shaw goal.
But you watched it from every angle. It went in.
Right. Right.
At first, it looked questionable. It looked like he was like pushing just with the top of the middle of his stick, just pushing it past the Elliott's pad.
I know.
But when you looked, it went in.
Yeah, I know. But so I'm stuck in the middle. I like to believe that the Blackhawks are not getting preferential treatment. But if I was St. Louis at that point and the series was just tied up 1-1, I could see where Ken Hitchcock might find reason to say those things. And I'm a little bit surprised that the league isn't going to fine him, because normally if you question things like that, it costs you a little bit in the pocketbook. As of now, they haven't levied any kind of fine against him. And it was interesting just the way he said it, because he didn't let up on it. He just kept going with it.
And Pat Foley gets so annoyed when they go to the Toronto War Room and they look at it must be little iPad type monitors, and he's like, "Where did they get those? Radio Shack?" He gets so angry.
I know.
It is really small when you have to, and they watched it over and over and over again, but this is the playoffs, baby, and they were double teaming Patrick Kane and Taser last night. I thought we looked good, and then I thought their defense
Has been strong. Their goaltending has been flawless.
Yeah,
you know, it's what you hope a series would be. There have been a fluke goal or two, but you're going to get that. That's going to happen.
Well, you have brought this up before when people in various other places, most recently St. Louis, start going,
Crawford.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes.
It's Crawford.
Okay. Again, I don't know how that messes with your mind. To me, if I'm Corey Crawford, I'm thinking they're digging me.
They like me. They know my name.
Well, the people behind us were starting Elliot, and it just wasn't working, and I couldn't partake.
You have to have a two-syllable name.
Right.
Elliot has three. It's one syllable too many. It only works with the two-syllable names.
And then you got to throw a syllable out, and which one do you toss?
Right.
Elliot, it doesn't work.
No.
Eat.
Ellie.
Yeah, you could do that, I guess. Or chant the wrong name. I think it'd be better to chant the wrong name.
That's how I feel.
Or Bannerman. Bannerman works.
Bannerman does kind of work. Right, it does. All right, so we're only down 2-1. It's not over.
No panicking.
No, there's no reason to panic.
I mean, we are there. I do have a dilemma, though, about a superstitious piece of clothing. I need to ask your advice when we return.
All right. Your calls, your thoughts, 312-981-7200. More talk next. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Hey, Spunky, do you wish you were handier around the house? Learn how to tackle those DIY projects with help from the local home experts. You can do it with Weekend Workbench. It's on Sunday mornings at 11, only on WGN-TV.
Blackhawks are down in the St. Louis Blues series right now, and don't panic. That's why there are 7 games. It's going to happen. Kevin found this on Reddit.com today. Since 2011, the Blackhawks have lost every single solitary game played on April 17th.
What's with that? How can that be?
I don't know, but thank God it's passed.
How can that be?
And, you know, yelling and screaming at the game, I kind of blew my voice out again. I got to be a little more careful. But, Bonnie, you really hurt yourself cheering for the Hawks. What'd you do?
Oh, my gosh. Usually I have to be careful because I'm prone to being overly physical in my cheering and yelling. I happen to have been this past week, the whole week, laid up going to the chiropractor because I threw my back out doing something stupid. And so I knew during this game I had to be really careful. But of course, when they scored, I jumped up carefully with my arms in the air and yelled, "Score!" And then, you know, I'm happy. Oh, they're doing so good in the beginning and everything. I had no idea that I was, you know, really so tense about the whole thing until I woke up this morning. My jaw is so swollen.
Oh, no.
What?
Because you had a knot in your stomach because of the bill, because of the game.
Yeah.
I have a knot on my face.
On your face?
My jaw. I have ice on my face like I had a tooth pulled or something. Because I threw my face out yelling and screaming carefully that I didn't hurt my back.
Bonnie, do you know if this is true? There was a stat a couple years ago where they said that there's more heart ailments during the Blackhawks in the playoffs the last several years. Because so many people's hearts are beating irregularly. Can that be true, or is that just one of those things where you go, that's just a myth?
It makes sense.
Yeah?
I think it's true. Yeah, I'll tell you, I am just, you know, just talking about it right now. My pulse has gone up. I'm excited.
Sure.
I'm feeling hopeful. Like you're saying, it's only 3 games out of 7. They're going to come back.
Boy, imagine, you know, Bonnie, if her jaw didn't hurt and how much she'd be talking.
Yeah, well.
I know. Isn't it amazing?
It is amazing.
I'm not kidding. I all went right. to eat a piece of toast this morning, and I was like, I can't open my mouth. But now I've been able to talk to you. It's because it's about the Hawks.
Okay.
I love them so much. Go Hawks. I love your show. I'm my favorite talk show all day long.
Thank you, Bonnie. Oh,
thank you, Bonnie.
You're very nice.
Take care of
yourself.
Have
a great day.
Okay.
She should wear a helmet while walking.
You should, yeah. Don't take any chances.
All right, Kevin wants to chime in. Hi, Kevin.
Hello, Bill and Wendy. You guys are always the best, and you guys are by far the best show. And you're,
oh, my God, thank you.
Your Kevin is great, too.
Oh, thank you, Kevin.
So, long story. So 20 years plus, I've been a state-certified soccer referee. So in every sport, what I can tell you is now everybody's going to these multiple reviews, whether it be on ice or for hockey. They go to, I think they go to New York or they go to Quebec or something.
Toronto.
Actually, they go, yeah, or Toronto. Thank you. So the thing is, what we've always been instructed as far as being a soccer official, you can call what you see. And if you don't see it, you can't imagine that, oh, I think I saw that.
Of course.
You can call what you, yeah, you call what you see. So,
yeah.
You know, for, I have a little bit of empathy for some of the officials that they, you know, they can't see everything. So when they're being questioned on a lot of the things like that, it does throw a lot into question. But so that the coach for St. Louis, you know, when he does make those statements and they reviewed it and they made a determination based on what they saw, especially on the offsides, I mean, in the end, it was the right decision that he was in an offside position because he lifted that back foot.
That's true.
So the puck entered.
But, Kevin, really, can I ask you, really, because we only have a minute, if you're an official and you have one coach accusing the league of favoriting one team over the other, when the next game comes up, which would have been yesterday's game, do you go out of your way to make things even and go, uh-oh, now everybody's watching us to see if we're being imbalanced one way or the other? Or you just say, yeah, well, if you think that's the way we are as a league, we're going to show you how we are and give all the calls to the Blackhawks. What do you do if you get accused that way?
No. You can't go any more than the minute that you've seen or the second that you've seen. You can't go back on anything. What I'll tell some of the coaches that have a problem is the only match that I've ever called perfectly without mistakes, the match that never got played.
Oh, really? Yeah. It's that prevalent.
We are all subject to some mistakes. So all I can tell you is I'm not perfect. Your players are not perfect. If your players had played a different way, then maybe the result would have been different. But, you know, the only one I ever called that was perfect was the match that just ultimately didn't get played.
Thank you so much for sharing that. It makes a lot of sense. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Kevin.
All right, playoff bra. I forgot all about it.
Oh, no.
And
what
a listener
happened?
Reminded me, hey, I hope you've whipped out the playoff bra. And I didn't, but I saved it. I don't know if you remember last year it ripped, so I sewed it and it was ready to roll.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I brought it out last night and it didn't work. So I don't know if I should try again on Wednesday. And if it doesn't work, then we can burn it out on Pioneer Court.
All right.
I'm trying to decide because I really want the Hawks to win. But
but see, I don't know what to do. We did okay without me wearing it in game two.
So
but
you went...
I don't know what to do, you guys. So help me think about it because I need to know if I need to wear it on Wednesday.
Right.
The problem is I laundered it from last year.
Yeah, that could mess it all up.
So when you don't wear it, you wear something else.
Right. I have more than one bra, but thanks.
Okay.
Just do you have the same pair of underpants? Don't answer that.
It's best not to know, Steve. It's best not to know. All right, we'll take a quick break. Steve with the news, and then a lot more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
We got a text, Bill. It's Bill and Wendy here, 720 WGN. And I'm not saying I don't believe this texter. I hope they're telling the truth, but I think it's our duty to help.
I will help in any way. What can I possibly do?
First of all, it's signed an avid listener, and this is a great question. My coworker's mother is on her deathbed. Mm. I don't want to be one of those people who say, I'm sorry for your loss.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any suggestions for what is the right thing to say? That is a great question.
That is tough. That seems to be the most probably generic thing to say in a situation like that, right? I'm sorry for your loss.
I mean, my dad died when I was 10. You were there at the wake. Yeah. I granted I was 10 years old and wasn't really paying attention, but people were more personal, not just, I'm sorry for your loss. To me, that is such a blanket statement. Well, like,
can I interrupt there?
Yeah.
I'm sorry to say this, but your father died when you were 10.
Yes.
Bill, you were at the wake?
No, I was not. No. I wasn't going to. No, but you said I was, Wendy. But
I did?
Yeah, you did.
I just didn't think you knew each other that long. That's
no, we didn't. But okay. I just said.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
I didn't mean to say that. Yeah. I didn't know
you did.
All right. I'm sorry. You weren't at the wake because I didn't know you. But it would have been really nice if you came.
You should have invited me. I still to this day hold a grudge.
Remember, you were going back and forth on whether to go, Bill.
I was going to go.
But that's what I'm saying. I'm 10 years old, and I don't really remember what people say. But it wasn't just the generic blanket, I'm sorry for your loss. That just...
Although I appreciate that more than just... A lot of people just quickly just go, I'm sorry. And when I was younger, I didn't know what they were sorry for. But, I mean, the obvious is they are sorry that you're feeling any emotional pain because of this. So I like that somebody goes through the whole paces of saying, I'm sorry for your loss, as opposed to just a quick, I'm sorry. That doesn't seem to be enough. But I don't know what you can possibly say. I mean, it's such a hard thing. If you've lost somebody that's close to you, there really is nothing you can possibly say that will make things all right. You're just acknowledging it.
Yeah, but I mean, if you're at the wake, and the wake is obviously for the survivors.
Right, of course.
Because it's, you know, in our family, being Italian, the wakes were almost fun because everybody would have these stories. And then at the end of it, that's when it gets very somber. And of course, the funeral is tier central. But the wake, you're sharing stories of people and, you know, the good thing, like you could go up and go, oh, he was such a great man. Just anything that I'm sorry for your loss to me is just, it's too impersonal.
Well, I'm a huge proponent of sharing a personal story about the person. But in this case, I'm not positive the person who texted us knows his coworker's mother, so it's, you can't share a story that doesn't exist.
I guess
all you can just do is the bare minimum, which is to just say, "I'm sorry you're going through what you're going through."
That's better, though.
Yeah,
that's better.
Yeah,
I am so sorry you're going through what you're going through. This must be really tough.
Yeah,
that to me is more heartfelt than just "I am sorry for your loss." It's right. So robotic and impersonal.
Right. Right. On many occasions where, because I'm so uncomfortable at wakes and funerals, I can take a wake. I really can.
Funerals are tough.
Funerals are impossible for me. Because I'm not religious at all, and most of the ceremony is very religious-based.
Totally.
It makes it even harder. You know, at least with a wake, you can take a personal moment and share a recollection of that person. But at a funeral, at the religious ceremony of a funeral, it's just... I don't know. I understand the importance of it. I really do. But I just feel so out of place at them.
I only go to funerals if it's a close friend or family. I mean, sometimes, you know, people say, oh, so-and-so died. Are you going to the funeral? And it's like, no, I went to the wake.
Yeah.
I just feel like, you know, I don't want to be considered, are they just going for the free lunch afterwards? The funeral lunch?
I hope not. Steve, have you gone just for the lunch? I hope not.
Well, sometimes they're very good lunches.
Oh, they're always right. Really good. There was this place that near Queen of Heaven Cemetery that we went with all of my family members. And when we'd go to figure out what was going to be the entree, we would call it the funeral chicken.
Sure, the funeral chicken.
Because that's what it was. We only really got it when we had, and I had it, funny, I had the funeral chicken for my bridal shower, too.
Spike Odell used to have his, Karen had a recipe for funeral potatoes.
That's what you drop off at someone's house or something.
Casserole, yeah.
Well, how weird is it?
But the wakes are, I think, much harder than the funeral.
Do you really? Yeah.
Well, there's a little anonymity in the funeral. You can go and sit there and...
You're just part of the throngs who are there to honor the person or the family.
At the wake, you have to be more personal and say, I'm sorry for your loss.
I don't
something.
Say.
I know, but you have that's when you're confronted to say something like that.
Yeah, but that's when you just come up and you just introduce yourself. If it's someone you worked with, for instance, if this listener is like, "What do I say to my coworker?" If you're going to the wake, obviously you know your coworker, but maybe you don't know his other relatives, and you just say, "Hi, my name is so and so. I work with so and so. I'm just so very sorry. I'm just so very sorry, but I'm sorry for your loss." I feel like is just a blanket statement.
Yeah, it does,
but it started right.
It does, it's well-intentioned, and it's a way of not getting too deep and just saying what needs to be said, which is, I know you're going through a terrible time right now. I've been in a similar situation. It gets better. If you know the person who died, it's so much easier because you can tell a story or two and just go, "Hey, here's something you probably don't know. We did this one time." But if you don't know the person, then you're kind of grasping a little bit, aren't you?
I don't know. Just the four-year loss really kind of...
It just bugs me.
And I said the dumbest thing when Tribune columnist and radio personality and huge Sox fan Terry Armour passed away unexpectedly.
Yeah.
I knew his wife, Linnell. And when we went to the wake, I went up to her and I hugged her, and I was finding myself at a loss for what to say. So I just said, "He loved you so much, Buckethead."
I hope that he called her Buckethead.
He did call her Buckethead. And after I said that, I spoke from my heart, and she hugged me back and just started laughing. And she whispered in my ear, "Thanks, I needed that." Because I'm like, God, I don't know if I should say that, but he called her that so affectionately, and he loved her so much. And in that instance, it worked.
Well, yeah. I mean, you took a huge chance
there. I know, but I knew her well enough. And I mean, and that's something too, he loved you so much. Maybe don't say Buckethead. Maybe, say their regular name. But thank God Linnell got it.
For anybody listening to this, if you have a personal story to share, don't call the person you're telling the Buckethead. But in this case,
it
made sense.
It did, and it just came from my heart, and thankfully it worked.
Sometimes I ask if the family snack room is open to everyone.
Oh, my God.
that's an icebreaker, Steve. You're doing the right thing. I think I've told you this.
Food's not always hot.
When I was in college, one of my friends from grade school died in a car accident. A guy named Dan, who I went all through grade school with, died in a car accident. And we go to the wake, and every wake is sad, but when it's somebody who's so young, I think he was 17 or 18, it's been 18. Sadness doesn't even begin. It's just wall to wall tears, and it's awful. And it's all right, so I'm in the line saying, giving condolences to the family, and I get to his mom, and I don't know what to say because you could just tell this woman has wept and wept and wept and has nothing left. So for some reason, I decide it's a good idea to tell a story about Dan, and the story is, I'll just tell you a very quick version. When we were little kids in grade school, there were these football stamps, not cards, but stamps that we collected, and I needed one more to have the whole set, Dan Pastorini of the Houston Oilers. And Dan looked at Mike. He goes, "You're missing one." I go, "Yeah." And he goes, "I have that one. I'll give it to you." And I go, "Well, we'll trade." And he goes, "Are you kidding? You're missing one stamp. It's yours." And he gave it to me.
What a sweet thing that he did.
I thought so, too. But I thought, in that moment, that was the best story to tell her about Dan.
It's a great story.
But she just stared at me when it was over. She just kept looking at me and looking at me. And I apologized, and I shook her hand, and I walked away going, "How stupid was that? She just lost her son," and I told her that ridiculous story. 2 years later, I ran into her and one of her daughters in a grocery store, and she gave me a big hug, and she goes, of all the things people told me that day, that was the one that really encapsulated Dan,
And she was probably just, so upset, and that again demonstrated the kindness of Dan, and she couldn't talk.
I think so too.
Come on, she remembers it.
I know.
What I mean. The "I'm sorry for your loss"
it's not enough.
It's not heartfelt.
I know. There's people with plenty of suggestions. 312-981-7200. We'll get to those next. Give us a call or a text. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. A listener has texted in. Somebody he works with, mother, is not doing well. She may not make it much longer. He says that the phrase, "I'm sorry for your loss," isn't exactly the best phrase. There must be something more appropriate, but what is it?
we're trying to find out. And someone says, when I lost my father, it bothered me when people would say loss. I didn't lose my father like I lost or misplaced a sock. It just really upset me.
Yeah.
So, I mean, everyone reacts differently to different things. Dan, what do you say to people? Hey, Dan.
Hi there.
Hi, what do you say?
I wanted to offer the suggestion, and this works really well for young children as well, is I know you've got special memories of your loved one. Please tell me a little bit about them. And that works really well with children as well.
Are you a funeral director?
I happen to be, yes.
I knew it.
How'd you do that? That was great.
Because I could tell you knew just what to say. That's what I mean. You're around it and more familiar with it than we are.
Yeah, way too many years of experience, number one. Plus, I had the good fortune of having a father who was a clergyman. And so I'm doubly blessed that way. But I find that, in particular, kids are very, very bored at funerals. They don't know what to do with their emotions. They don't know what to do with their activities.
Amen.
But if you take 10, 15 seconds and just simply ask them, tell me about your grandpa. What's your best memory of him?
That's pretty nice.
That's solid. Very strong. Thank you, Dan. Thank you very much.
I knew it.
Yeah.
I just knew it. Wow. He was too good at it. Hi, Mike.
Hi, how are you?
Are you a funeral director?
No. Well, wait a minute. In kind of roundabout way, when I first started doing, I'm a hairdresser, so when I first started doing this, I did end up being an apprentice in a funeral home for a year, you know, doing the hair. And,
no one's going to get my hair and makeup right. No one.
Right. Exactly. But what I was telling your producer was I had a client of mine that for years and years and years, she was 102 when she passed away. So you can imagine that the funeral wasn't that large, and there were some people that would come in and they were giving me their condolences, and I'm like, oh no, I'm not the grandson or the great grandson, I'm just her hairstylist, you know, and now that my Fridays are free, I had comedy to her, and she would understand that, you know, and they would come up to me and they'd say, oh, she would say such nice things about you. And I go, well, I wish I could say the same, you know. And that's what I try to do because I hate funerals. I really do. I mean, you know, I like to remember the person the way that they were alive. And I just don't like seeing, you know, them laid out. And it's just amazing to me that I know it's a ritual and everybody has it and it's like the final goodbye, but I just rather just say, okay, you know, that hour that I would spend with her is when we talk stories, because a lot of the other ladies that I had have passed away.
Yeah.
And now I'm down to two. I just told them I'm going to put them in a cage match and say whoever comes out wins. Because, you know, I've been doing the hair for 30 years.
Yeah.
So.
Well, thank you so much, Mike. Comedy sometimes helps, too, but you have to do it carefully.
Remember good stories about them.
That's good. Remember good stories about them. I also, young child, and it was her father who passed away unexpectedly, and it was a friend of my kids, and I just said to the little girl, like, that hole that you feel in your heart right now will pretty soon fill up with some great memories of your dad. It may take a while. That's the only thing I could say. Mark, what do you do?
I'm a college professor.
Well, I didn't mean, like... for a living. What do you do when you give condolences? Sorry.
Well, this is something Bill knows. In fact, I know Bill. I remember him from his district furniture days.
Oh, a long time ago. Yeah.
Did he sell you an ottoman?
He rented a lot of videos to me.
Oh, yes.
I saw him at Who's On First.
Oh, wow.
In Elmhurst, right?
Yeah.
Right. In the Jewish culture, we say, may their memory be for a blessing.
I've heard that many times.
May their memory be for a blessing.
For a blessing, yes.
Yeah.
That's pretty nice.
We say this at the funeral. We say this at the Shiva.
Yeah.
We say this at yard sites.
And I think it encapsulates the mood. I think that's a nice thing to say. I really do. Mark, thank you. It was great to talk to you again.
You're very welcome. Nice to talk to you too, Wendy.
Thanks, Mark.
I didn't want to tell him he's got 3 movies that are still overdue. That's from a long time ago, too.
Sherry, we only have 30 seconds here, but what are your thoughts?
Oh, my gosh. You don't know I go off of everybody's beep. All right, I'm 80. I've been to many, many, many funerals. Nobody ever knows what to say.
Yeah.
But I'd like to point out that when people say, oh, I can't go, it's too sad, they're making it about themselves, not about the mourners. I hate that when people say that, because what if people didn't go? But anyway,
that's true.
You know, it is true. Don't say, I don't want to go to a hospital. Oh, no, they creep me out. You got to do those things, and you have to teach your children to do those things, too. Bring the children to the funerals. I think that that's the best part, you know, when kids are running around. And, I recall my grandchildren going under, you know, a casket. And I mean,
I did that at my father's funeral. I had cousins I had never, 10 years old. I didn't really know. We were in another room.
No, and it just adds that element of spontaneity and hope and just what our life, you know, is all about. But nobody knows what to say. And I recall once a young person's a horrible suicide. And I just went and just got down to their level because the parents were sitting down. You don't want to stand up. And I said, oh, my God, the world is upside down. It's just something that you can say whatever you would say by yourself to when you're thinking about it.
Right.
You know, nobody knows. There are no roadmaps.
No,
so,
there aren't.
Just have to say what you feel. And then people do, you know, or just give them a hug.
That means something, too. Yeah. Thank you so much, Sherry. Hmm. And someone, I think, this is the problem. The presence, the word, I'm so sorry for your loss, it's so overworked because it is said repeatedly on all the cop shows and TV shows and medical shows.
Yeah.
It's become a catchphrase. It really kind of has.
But I remember it being said when I was a little kid. It was the go-to phrase back then. It hasn't changed all these years later, has it?
I don't remember ever
you
hearing
remember
that till
no?
It was like, you know, a cop coming to tell somebody on a TV show, so sorry for your loss.
Yeah.
It seemed so generic.
Robotic, maybe. Yeah. All right. We have to take a break.
Thanks for all your calls.
Yeah, we so appreciate all the calls and all the texts. Steve with the news coming up in just a moment. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Money is the root of all evil.
Money, Wendy, is the root of all evil.
I like evil.
I'd like to find out if this is true somehow. if there's a miracle in the making, I would love to find out if that's true. Here's a story that is disturbing. You know, there's a big push to raise the minimum wage to $15 an hour, and we keep hearing the pros and the cons of this. But now word comes out. This is out of Huffington Post this morning. I'm looking at the number, and I already know the story because I read it this morning, and I'm looking at the number, and I say to myself, well, that number can't be right, but it is. As people are pushing like crazy to get their minimum wage up to $15 an hour, word comes that many, many, many CEOs across the land are earning an upwards of $9,000 an hour. $9,000 an hour. And that's every hour. That's not like show up, do an hour of work, and then sit tight for a few weeks. They're making on average $9,000 an hour and sometimes more.
But I mean, here's the thing. When I started the employment world at the age of 16, I worked at Brookfield Zoo.
Yeah.
I don't know what the minimum wage was, $3.35 an hour.
That's
something.
About right, isn't it? It's somewhere in the threes.
It might have even been under that. And I worked at Brookfield Zoo on the motor safari and the railroad train and in the stands. And I loved it. And it was a minimum wage job because I was 16 years old.
Yeah.
And then I stayed there for 10 years or so. I don't even remember how long I worked there. I also had a job at Loyola Hospital working in the kitchen. I loved this job. I seriously loved it. You would just see the menu of what the patient ordered. And if you were working the food line, you would, if they ordered lasagna, you'd scoop up a piece of lasagna and put it on the plate.
Right.
If they wanted Jello, you'd go and grab it. And
yeah,
it was fun. And that was $5 an hour.
Big money.
It really was.
Big money. My first job, and this wasn't a full-on job, but I was babysitting before I was 16. I was babysitting at 13, 14, and 15 and earning a hefty 75 cents an hour. Sometimes at the end of the night, if I put in a 4 or 5 or a 6-hour night, they would round it up to the next dollar, which was even better. So after a full night, I'd walk away with, you know, $5. And that was tremendous.
You must have been the best babysitter.
I was a pretty good babysitter.
In the world.
I was a pretty good babysitter, but the reason I bring this up is my daughters babysitting a few years ago were making $10 an hour, and there were nights where they just didn't want to, you know, I'm not saying my kids were lazy, but they're like, I don't know, I babysat Friday night, I babysat last week, I don't want to babysit again tonight. So they were turning down $10 an hour to babysit. And it's not just them. I know their friends were too. But $10 an hour, that's not bad when you're 15 years old, 14 or 15, is it?
No, and we do that because, you know, we're all a little more anxiety-ridden parents, so
sure.
We want to pay. We feel
right.
We want to give you money, so you really take care of our kids.
Right, right.
And, you know, so when you start in the workforce, minimum wage is what you expect.
But you think, like you said, you imagine for many people that that's a temporary
right.
salary. You're not going to – this isn't your whole career.
Right.
You're just working – at Arby's or Sbarro or McDonald's or Wendy's just to until something better
like
comes
college
along.
College or something until you get, as they call, a real job.
Right.
The thing that is upsetting is there are people who have graduate degrees and who are really qualified and can't find anything other than these jobs.
Right.
And I understand then that you should be able to make a living wage, and $15 an hour will help with that. But I don't know what the answer is.
But there's a trickle-down effect to this in that if you have let's just take the fast food industry because that seems to be where this is centered. If you're going to start paying all your workers $15 an hour, then the bottom line is the price of everything is going to go up dramatically because they're not going to take a loss on that. A fast food place isn't going to just eat the difference. They're going to pass that on to you, the consumer. So, you know, a Big Mac is going to cost an extra 50 cents, 60 cents, 70 cents.
You know what? If they will give me 4 sweet and sour sauces with the 20-piece McNugget, I would.
Extra.
I know, but Bill, they give you 2 sweet and sour sauces for a 10-piece. Why don't they double that if you're doubling the to 20-piece McNugget? Why don't you get 4?
It's out of proportion. It's totally out of proportion. All right, they list a whole bunch of high-paid CEOs. Larry Merlo is the head of CVS Pharmacy. Larry Merlo averages $13,914 an hour. If you take what his base salary is. No, this is just the base salary. This isn't with all the perks that you get in being the CEO of a major corporation. And you probably get plenty of those. But just based on what his salary is, he makes on average $13,914 an hour. Great work if you can get it. I'm not whatever he does to earn that, good for him. I like to see people making a lot of money, but that's a lot of money.
Yeah, but I mean, look at what he's the CEO of many drug stores. It's not just one mom and pop shop.
Right, right, right.
And,
right.
You know, kudos to them for pulling out all the nicotine products in their drugstore.
True, very true. Leslie Wexner is in charge of a company called L Brands. That's the people who are behind Victoria's Secret. Leslie Wexner.
She's getting paid too much.
$13,062 per hour. Every hour that Leslie Wexner works, she hauls away $13,062. Howard Schultz is the CEO of Starbucks. He's in just under $10,000 an
hour. He's getting paid
too
much. And they still put the wrong name on the cup when he gets coffee there.
Yes, they do. $9,659 an hour. Douglas McMillan, that's the CEO of Walmart. He picks up $9,323 an hour. So I think
these are huge corporations, though.
But what could they be doing to earn that much money per hour? And
making
again, I don't
huge decisions that affect the good of the whole company. And, you know, I'm sure they've gone to college. I'm sure they have a degree.
Right.
I'm sure they have experience.
Right.
It's one person. It's not like there are 5 people making that amount of money at these corporations.
Right, right. But let's say, for the sake of argument, you work behind the counter at CVS, or let's say you're one of the girls who works at Victoria's Secret in the mall, or the kid working across the street at Starbucks, or the old guy who's a greeter at Walmart, and you're pushing and shoving and wanting so badly to make just $15 an hour, and you realize that up at the top of that ladder, $15 an hour means nothing to the guy who's in charge of Starbucks or Walmart or Victoria's Secret. So you say to yourself, I'm fighting a battle that I can't win. They don't know what $15 is. If you're making that much money, how many hours would you have to work if you work at CVS or L Brands or Starbucks or Walmart to make what that guy makes in an hour?
I know. It's crazy. But how many people are employed at Walmart? If everybody got $15, then all of a sudden...
Yeah.
I mean, isn't that kind of why you try really hard and work really hard to get the most you can get in your specific
Without
field?
Without a doubt. Without a doubt. It is.
I wonder what that feels like.
I don't know. I don't know the answer to that.
Should we take some calls? We'll take a quick break, and then what are your thoughts on this minimum wage? I get it. If this is your job and this is all you can find, you do need to make money for your family. And I know there are a lot of people who work several of these jobs just to bring food home to their family.
Right.
312-981-7200, Bill Leff, Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN.
All right, so this is kind of alarming as people are fighting and wanting so badly a $15 an hour wage increase that many CEOs are earning a haul of $9,000 per hour and up. I did the math on this. This means your average worker who would, if he or she makes $15 an hour, would have to work 600 hours straight just to earn what a CEO makes in 1 hour. That's a slight discrepancy.
A little bit. But that's why one's a CEO.
Yeah.
Hi, Tom. Guess.
Hey, good morning. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. Fine, thanks. I think what may happen if it does go, whether it's legislated or if it's decided upon, I mean, labor costs are labor costs. And I think since most small businesses are affected by this, what could possibly happen is, you know, wherever there's a three-person shift or a three-person department, you know, right now, say if they're getting $10 an hour, it's $30 in labor costs, okay? So if it's a mandatory 15, I think what could happen quite a bit is one of the three are going to be gone. And then the two that are left, you're going to have to do that much more to, you know, whatever the jobs are necessary to be completed. So I think that being a huge reality if this goes through. And, I mean, I'm all for people making as much money as possible because I don't care if you make $100,000 a year or $30,000 a year. Most people are going to spend it back into the economy. And the more spent back in the economy, everyone works, you know, businesses do well, government gets their tax cut off of the, you know, what's being spent. So it's all good.
All right. Well, thank you. Thank you for sharing that.
But all these people who are pushing for the $15 wage increase don't realize what was just said is true. It's going to cost a lot of jobs because businesses are going to have to make up that deficit somewhere. And that means the way to make it up is to cut jobs. The people who keep their jobs will make a couple dollars more an
hour. Absolutely. Hi, is this Byron?
Yes, it is.
Hi, Byron.
Hi. I think one of the other things that happens is, either people cut jobs or the prices for everything go up. I mean, if you've ever been to, like, San Francisco, you go buy a six-pack of beer in a liquor store, it's like $22 or something like that. So
what? Is it really?
One time I went and bought, like, a six-pack of Stella, and it was, like, $21 or something. So the cost of everything goes up. And the problem is there's a lot of people who, like, went to college and got a college degree and paid all this money for a college education who are right now making $17 or $18 an hour. So if then minimum wage goes up to $15, there's no way that their jobs that are paying them $17 are just going to automatically increase their rate of pay up to $24 or whatever to compensate.
And so they went to school for that. They spent a lot of money on college.
Exactly. And now they have less buying potential. They have all these student loans that they can't pay back, and now everything around them is costing more. So it just puts more of a financial burden on a lot of the young people that are trying to deal with their student loan debt and all this when now everything else costs more money because minimum wage went up.
Interesting thoughts. Thank you so much, Byron. Mike was an EMT, and how much did you make several years ago?
When I started in 2003, which was a second part of my career, I started at $8.50 an hour, taking grandma home from nursing home or to nursing homes or taking people to dialysis, carrying them up and down from the third floor. It was a lot of backbreaking work.
And a lot of responsibility if something happened to them.
Oh, yeah. We were very closely monitored. The bottom line is I really enjoyed the job. I just didn't enjoy the paycheck. Thank God my wife was working at a very good job, and she was able to carry me through, with our expenses. When I finally retired a couple years ago, I was making $13.25 an hour.
Oh my God!
Maybe it was $13.75. I can't remember right now. But we would get $4 for every call we responded to. When I first started, it was only $2 for every call. So you do about six or seven calls a day, and you'd get that $12 or $14 plus your $8.25 or $8.50 an hour. I think it was. The paychecks are pretty small compared to what I was doing before that, when I was working for manufacturing accountant for a big company.
See, that's crazy, because $15 an hour, I mean, all that's going to happen, they might drop a burger on the floor. You have such responsibility.
Is that frustrating, yeah. Mike? Like when you say to yourself, I was carrying human beings up and down stairs and their lives were on the line and I was there to save them. And as Wendy pointed out, somebody's, you know, flipping burgers and wanting more money than you made. Does that bother you a little bit?
You know what? What you had to realize is that the job, when I knew what the job paid when I took it. It wasn't a surprise to me.
Yeah.
It was supposed to be a stepping stone onto bigger and better things. You know, you were supposed to develop your skills there and then go on to paramedic school, and then you can get into a private company as a paramedic, or even better yet, on one of the city or the suburbs as a paramedic, and they pay pretty good to start. So if you looked at it as a stepping stone, like an apprenticeship program, I guess.
Right.
It was easy. I guess the best part about it was is that I really had a feeling of I was helping people more than just trying to make it as a job. I was really feeling good about just helping society somehow, making things better for people.
That's a great attitude.
You're a good man. Enjoy your retirement, Mike.
Oh, I do. I really enjoy. I saw you guys at the auto show a couple years ago. We're kind of looking forward to seeing you again at one of the shows.
Oh, thank you. Well, we'll say hi when you do.
I took a picture with you. It was great. I still got it.
Oh, hold on to it. It's going to be worth a lot of money.
Bill didn't break the camera?
Cut it out.
No,
that hurts.
Great.
That hurts.
So friendly. Appreciate it. Well,
thank you, Mike. You're very kind.
Thank you, Mike.
Thank
you. What a nice guy.
Yeah.
And that's what I mean. It's like you kind of know when you take a job, like what you're getting into, just like Mike said.
Right.
I knew why I wasn't going in. You know, I didn't work at Brookfield Zoo for the money. I enjoyed it.
Yeah. Yeah,
and
yeah,
I
yeah.
certainly didn't get into radio for the money. I really like doing this.
Yeah.
Don't you?
It's all right. I love it. Are you kidding?
I know, but
it's
I mean,
the best.
You choose your career, you
right,
know?
Absolutely. But that's the difference is between a job and a career.
Right.
Anyone who's working at a fast food place, more than likely that would fit under the bracket of job more than career, unless you're in management and you're moving up that ladder, I guess. All right, we have to take a break. Thank you to everybody who called. 312-981-7200 is the number. We're out of time for now, though. We've got news next. It's Bill and Wendy WGN. Wendy, Eric Zorn is here. He's as feisty as ever. Eric, you look, even by your own standards, you look extra feisty today.
I think so, yeah. I'm feeling a little
What's bringing this on? Why
There's
so feisty?
There's a feisty twinkle in his eye.
There's a feisty twinkle in your eye.
It's been a really interesting little weekend for news.
Yeah, there's a lot going on. If it's okay with you, can we start with the Paul Ryan story? Because
sure.
I love this story.
Yeah.
Paul
he's
Ryan.
He's not running.
Well, he says he's not running, and he's not technically running, but a lot of
Yet.
People have believed that if it's a brokered convention, he would be the logical name that the Republican Party would pick.
Right.
What would be his motive for throwing us off the scent?
Well, let me just back up just a little bit. Ryan ran. He was Mitt Romney's running mate in 2012.
Yeah.
So he has been through the national vetting process where the media has taken an extra look at him. And he wasn't, you know, a terrific candidate. Obviously, his ticket lost. But he was someone, and he declined the opportunity to run for president. But he has a habit of declining things that he actually wants. He declined rather strenuously. He didn't say he didn't want to be the Speaker of the House last October. I don't want to do it. I don't want to. No way. I got other things to work on. And finally,
lo and behold,
the party came to him and begged him as a compromise candidate. He's a respected, serious policy guy. And I think he's like 44, 45 years old. He's not like
46.
Toward the end of his career. 46. He's right. He's near the end of his career. He's not near the end of his career, I'm saying.
He's 6'1", too, so, just in case you're wondering.
So you could pick him on your pickup basketball team.
Oh.
So anyway, you know, flashing forward, we've got this incredibly contentious primary season with Cruz and Trump fighting it out, and then there's also stray delegates out there, like for Rubio and some other candidates have won, and Kasich is still, you know, technically in the hunt. And there's a substantial amount of thought that says that we're going to get to this convention in July in Cleveland, and there's not going to be enough votes for any candidate to have a majority. You need a majority of the votes of them, at the Democratic convention also. And that after a couple of ballots where no one gets a majority, the party elders are going to gather and say, we need a compromise candidate, someone who has not been tainted by this process, hasn't been calling everybody names, and they'll bring in Paul Ryan. That was the thought. I thought it was the most plausible scenario when I was doing my New Year's predictions. I don't know if you guys remember.
We were
doing those. And the drumbeat's been growing louder as it's looking more and more likely like that Trump is not going to get to, I think it's 1237, the number of votes he's going to need. He's going to fall short of that, and it's going to throw the convention into chaos. And so, you know, and people who are supporting Trump don't like Cruz. People who are supporting Cruz don't like Trump, and there's not very, really very many people supporting Kasich, so who are they going to go to? And so last Tuesday or Wednesday, Ryan finally called the news conference, and he basically, you know, he said, "No way, I don't want this. The candidate should be someone who's run for the office. I don't want it right now." And there's sort of two ways to look at that. One is that he doesn't want it.
And do you believe he doesn't want it?
Well,
who
no.
would want it, for God's sakes?
Well,
can't figure that out.
Let me explain the two schools of thought. I'll tell you the one that I don't subscribe to, which is that he thinks this is an incredible mess. He said he's 46, right?
Mm-hmm.
So he can run in 4 years, he could run in 8 years, he could run in 12 years, he could run in 16 years. He would still be younger.
But he's getting the ultimate bye week. He doesn't have to run. I mean, if they do a brokered convention and they just pick his name and say, "You're the guy the party wants," he doesn't have to go through the rigmarole that they've been going through the past couple of months.
He doesn't, but he runs the risk of becoming a losing presidential candidate.
Yep.
But that's not...
And then how does that affect him 4 years from now, eight years from
Nixon
now?
Nixon lost in 1960. He came back.
Right.
Right. I mean, so...
And strong. He was our best president ever.
And Reagan...
Quite a looker.
Well, yes. Reagan didn't actually run, but Reagan, you know, he lost narrowly. He came very close in 76 to getting the nomination from Gerald Ford.
But he's already been branded a non-winner. He already ran last time with Mitt Romney and didn't win. He's already got that on
him. Maybe he does have it there. But, you know, the thought is that he just thinks this season, this presidential season for the Republicans is like a dumpster fire, right? It is really
he wants no part of it.
And he wants no part of it. He's going to let
move.
He's going to let Cruz or Trump or Kasich or maybe Mitt Romney will jump in, something like that. And he's going to let that candidate go down to
defeat. Do you
think
Mitt Romney would jump in?
Mitt Romney's a possibility. He clearly wants to be president badly. And
yeah.
He was very disappointed that he didn't win last time.
But just the mere fact that he so castigated Donald Trump, and it didn't make a dent, more people started supporting Donald Trump after he came out against Donald Trump. Doesn't that show Mitt Romney that the American people just don't seem to be on his side at
this
point?
Yes, and I think Mitt Romney would be a really lousy choice on their part. And I think Ryan probably sees that this election looks very unlikely for the Republicans, presidential election. So Ryan or whoever, all these other people who think they might want to be president, can wait 4 years. And if Hillary Clinton, if she wins, is as bad as they think she's going to be, then that's going to be a great opportunity for someone in 4 years to
come in and save the day.
That's one school of thought. The other school of thought is that this is exactly what Ryan would have to say, would want to say,
it's
would
all
need
orchestrated
to say right now in order to have any hope of unifying the Republican Party.
Yep.
Once he's chosen. He can't seem to be seen as angling forward or trying to undermine the process that's going on right now. He can't seem to be like secretly plotting against Trump or Cruz or Kasich. He has to be the one who is oh me, okay, and
poker
dragged
face
in by his arm, you know. You get up there on that stage and you give your acceptance speech. He's like, "Oh well, okay."
Yeah.
It's already written, you know that.
So that's a school that I think, I mean, it's, I still think that he would do it if they asked him, which is why I don't take totally seriously his, you know, Sherman-esque statement.
Yeah, yeah,
William,
yeah.
Tecumseh Sherman, who said, "I will not, if nominated, I will not, I will not run. If elected, I will not serve." You know,
I was thinking more Sherman and Peabody, but I love the reference too.
There was a great addition to that. Apparently, like Morris Udall or someone like that said something like, "If I am nominated, I will move to Mexico, and if I am elected, I will fight extradition."
Very funny.
But so my theory is that. He has to say that now. He has to say like no, as emphatically as possible if he has any hope of not only being drafted but then having the hope of the party coming together behind him, because that's what's going to have to happen. This convention will blow up if they don't nominate Cruz or Trump. So you have to have somebody who is seen as a white knight and not someone who's been evilly plotting behind the
scenes.
Are
you in the same school of thought that many people are, that if for some reason this comes to a convention and they choose somebody other than the front runner, even though Trump doesn't have, or Cruz doesn't have enough of the magic number, enough of the delegates, a lot of people say that this just shows that the political process in America is a sham. Are you one of those people?
Yes, I am, with a feeling that if someone has a substantial lead, I mean, if it's really close, you can argue, well, it's like the third quarter of a football game. It's postponed by lightning storm. And you can't say, well, they were going to win, so let's give them the game.
Yeah.
I think at some point you have to throw it into another process. But, you know, we have all these primaries, and the illusion of that is that the voters are picking the winner. And in our political tradition, the person with the most votes is the winner. And, of course,
Al Gore that.
I know. We have the Electoral College. We have other systems that are somewhat un- or anti-democratic that go against that. But I think that there is a strong sentiment out there, like, if Trump gets to the convention with the most votes, which I think he will.
Yeah.
And the most delegates, I should say. Well, both, actually, the most votes and the most delegates. And to have it given to somebody else because – and Cruz has been playing this ground game really well. He's been winning all these state conventions where they haven't had primaries. He's been getting all these extra delegates.
Yeah.
That he's been gaming the system. And that the system – I mean, you know, we pay for these primaries. Something that fascinates me is that, you know, the primary – we keep getting reminded by Reince Priebus and the, you know, these other people and the party bigwigs that political parties are private institutions. And we can make our own rules and – and I'm thinking, well, if you're a private institution, why are we paying for your primary elections? You know, we're like spending millions of dollars to hold elections so that you can pick your candidates in this apparently democratic way. And then you're saying, oh, well, but we make our own rules. So something about that is kind of bothering me. But I think there's going to be a strong sentiment when we get to Cleveland that Trump's going to deserve it.
More to discuss with Eric Zorn of the Chicago Tribune. If you'd like to comment or a question, then 312-981-7200 is your best bet. It's Bill and Wendy on WG. Eric Zorn is here of the Chicago Tribune. Is he feisty? Oh, yeah. He's very, very feisty. Eric, a couple of questions. Question number one is this. The comptroller here in town has decided, in the state, decided to delay the paychecks of the lawmakers who can't seem to figure out a way to make the budget work. So they'll be slightly strapped for cash. They'll get their money. It'll just take them a little bit longer. Is this a good thing or a bad thing?
Well, I think that it is a good thing that our lawmakers are feeling urgency to get this done because there are people who are really hurting because we don't have a budget and our governor and the General Assembly can't agree on this. There are people who are hurting. It's a good thing that they're feeling urgency. I don't particularly like the tactic of withholding paychecks. If you remember, Governor Quinn did something somewhat similar a couple of years ago over the pension that he said he wasn't going to pay state lawmakers until they came to some sort of reconciliation on the pension problem that he was trying to push them into action. And I was opposed to that, too. I thought that was, you know, do you really want the executive branch yanking the chains of the legislative branch? As a general rule, I mean, whether you agree or disagree, because the time is going to come when you disagree with what they're yanking the chains about. They're withholding paychecks, putting that extra pressure on them to do something. I think it's potentially a really bad precedent. I believe from what I've read that Comptroller Munger she's a Republican, and she's running for re-election because if you remember, Judy Bartopinka was elected Comptroller in November of 2014, and then shortly thereafter died.
Right.
Munger is an appointee of Governor Rauner, and she has to face a special election this fall running against Susana Mendoza, who's the clerk of Chicago. Mm-hmm. And so this is widely seen as a political move on her part to do this. And what she's doing, you spelled it out just right. She's not refusing to pay them. She's saying, I'm going to put you in the same stack of bills.
Right.
You know, we are like $7.5 billion behind in our bills.
God.
And people are taking months to get paid. And these are people who are providing real services as opposed to our legislators who are not really doing very much right now because they're waiting for their instructions from the leaders. So it's very satisfying that she's doing this. On the other hand, I do worry about the precedent. A lot of these lawmakers have very little power, really.
Yeah.
And this is their job. This is how they make their car payments and their tuition payments and their mortgage payments. So to put them... On the other hand, I mean, I just want to, as I'm blabbering away here, I realize that you're not going to hear any violin music from the people who are running these social service agencies who are not getting paid, whose clients are not getting served and so on. So, I mean, politically, a very smart move. And I hope that it does generate some pressure, some momentum on the part of our the General Assembly and the governor to come to some terms on these things, because this has gone on for 10 months now. I forget the clock is running, but when we get to July 1st, it'll be a year without a budget.
That is inexcusable. And Eric, I have an idea for your next column. You should find out the city of Chicago's credit score for all the late payments and not paying.
Sure our credit score has taken a hit.
Well, you can actually find this out. You can go and look at our credit rating. You look at the bond rating, Moody's, Standard & Poor's, those kind of places, and it's bad. I think the Chicago one was moved down to junk status. I don't want to say that because there might be some bond investors out there listening to this show for advice. But seriously, you do need to take a look at that. But our credit rating has gone down and down and down because of exactly the kind of things that you're talking about, Wendy. That it's and what that means, of course, is that it's more expensive to. It's not that we can't borrow money. It's just that it's way higher more interest expensive. Rates. Way, way higher interest rates. They just borrowed a bunch of money on the schools, and it was like it's something like 6 or 7% interest rates. I mean, interest rates that you haven't heard of for years. We're having to pay because our credit rating is so bad.
So awful.
So this is a real among the real problems that impact all of us. Is that when you're paying that much to borrow that kind of money to cover these bills. Yep. Then the bills get bigger down the road, and our kids will be gone, but our kids are going to have to pay for this big time. So it's a real issue.
They better start saving.
Yeah, without a doubt. One more quick topic. We don't have a whole lot of time, but I find this very interesting. And I don't know if this was your idea originally or it was an idea you heard about and thought this would be a good thing, but maybe doing away with audiences at the presidential debates wouldn't be the worst thing in the world.
It's something that's been bothering me for years, that when the audiences get kind of rowdy at the presidential debates.
Yeah.
And it was really, really noticeable last Thursday night when Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton debated in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
And they were yelling and screaming at the answers and even the questions.
Yeah.
So they'd ask a question, they'd be cheering the question. I'm thinking, this is like, and in my column I referred to it as like the Maury Povich show.
Yeah.
He's half expecting someone to pick up a folding chair and throw it at somebody. And you're thinking like, this is not what presidents do. Presidents don't have to stand in a room and debate public leaders while people are jeering and screaming
right
at them. You want to know their thought presses. You want to hear them think through their answers, give an answer, have it responded to. You don't want to turn it into a show like that. And as long as the audiences can be somewhat quiet and respectful, okay, I don't really care that they're there, but they were really a part of that show. I thought it was really detracted from it.
Yeah.
It's a serious thing we're doing here, picking a new
leader.
But
they've done this in the past. You have a debate where it's just a moderator and the two candidates, right? There's not
always
an audience.
Well, sure. Of course, the original big presidential debate was Nixon versus Kennedy back in, what was that? That would have been 60. And it was done over here at the BBM studios. And it was just in a studio. And there was no audience at all. And
many people think that it was that debate that cost Nixon the presidency.
Nixon sweating and everything.
Right.
So.
Right.
Yeah, not a good showing. Yeah,
no, he didn't do too
but
well.
But I think it would be much better to have them in a studio setting or the kind of, Channel 7 does these debates where they have like 50 people in the room.
Yeah,
It's not like a terrible, they're trying to turn these into big events. It's very manageable. And you don't hear people yelling during the debates. Hold your applause to the end. That's fine.
Although times have changed. Even if there are 50 people, they may be 50 of the loudest. As people.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure Steve Bertrand agrees with me on this because we were talking about it on the Mincing Rascals the other day.
Hey, where can you find that? WGNplus.com?
Plus, iTunes and Stitcher, all the places
where
we'll find podcasters. We're talking, Steve, about limiting the audiences at presidential debates.
Limiting or doing away with fully? You think not just limiting them, but getting rid of the entire audience,
I could see getting
right?
rid of them. You think getting rid of them or just having them, putting socks in their mouth?
Socks in their mouth, oh, definitely.
That's better.
Yeah,
that's much better.
They're ruined. Yeah, or tasering them.
Eric, thank you so much. We'll take a quick break. We'll find out what Steve has on the Wintrust Business Lunch next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. And it's Wendy Snyder. Thrilled that you're here. I'm not good with the tech stuff, Wendy. You know
that's
that.
That's all right.
I'm not good with the tech
always
stuff.
Turns your microphone off. Is he trying to tell you something?
I don't know what he's trying to tell me, but whatever it is, it's coming through loud and clear, Steve
Bertrand.
He pulls
those shenanigans on us up here,
isn't
too.
Isn't he a little elf?
Yes, he is just a little devil.
Yeah, a little sprite. Yep. All right, we have a good show planned for you today, including something that's been a little confusing to me over the last hour. And Wendy, you're doing your best to help me through this. Apparently, I'm under some police investigation, and I may end up going to jail.
Well, we hope not.
I hope that's not the case.
Here, I'm showing you a little picture of how to turn the speakerphone on your phone. Do those buttons mean anything to you on your home screen?
Let me see.
All right. God, no. I am with a techno wizard. We're trying to get a speakerphone to go on Bill's Windows phone because you got a call at the very end of the first half of our show, the first show.
During the show, I received a call and... You know me, the show is very important to me.
But a phone call.
But I don't get a lot of phone calls, so I thought I should really take this one. It could be something important. And I got a pre-recorded message explaining to me that I am currently... It didn't say my name at any point during the call. It just said that I am currently under police investigation.
And you will be taken under custody as there are some serious allegations pressed
right
on your name at this moment.
That if I don't call this number, and then it gave me a phone number with a prefix that's not from this area. It's from Seattle, I think you said, right?
Yes, I looked it up.
All right, so if I don't call the number, that local police enforcement would come and bring me in, essentially. But it wouldn't say what crime I've committed.
And it wouldn't say what police department. It just said local authorities.
It'd be local.
Well, that is just such a general statement.
No, I've never been to Seattle. I used to watch Frasier a lot, and I enjoyed Frasier very much. But it's not illegal to watch Frasier. I can't get in trouble for watching Frasier. Local police wouldn't round me up for that.
Are you quite certain that there are no warrants for your arrest?
In Seattle or
anywhere? Because your local authorities is, you know, is used broadly.
I don't know for sure, but I'd be shocked. I haven't committed a felony in years. I don't know what they'd have on me. But I could see where a lot of people would be extremely upset to get this news that local police authorities were coming to round them up.
Well, it's funny because I punched in that number, which I'm hesitant to give out right now, but it brought me to a website called Bad Numbers. And you can look up a number,
yeah,
and it's Washington, USA, and then Seattle, it says, is the location. And it says that there are probably 20 complaints listed between April 7th and mm-hmm. today.
Oh, so this is a fairly new thing.
Yes. And
complaints from people who have had a similar circumstance, or complaints from people who want me to be rounded up and put in jail for whatever crime I committed.
Only one of those. No, they're all issuing complaints. And someone says, as of April 13th, I never answered, but they leave me voicemails nonstop that say I have four allegations against me. Were there four?
They said there were four allegations against me.
And charges are being pressed.
They said that, too. I believe they said that. I know for sure four allegations, but, you know, I was already so nervous. I'm too pretty for jail. I can't go to jail.
Pretty to whom? All right. So a lot of people, there are two saying that it was the four serious allegations against them. And if you don't call this 206 number back,
mm-hmm.
the local authorities are going to come scoop you up.
Good luck. I'm very slippery.
But now other people, most, all the other probably 45 complaints are saying this is the IRS. And
no, they didn't mention, because I thought, if they're going to pull that scam, what better day to do it than today? It's tax day.
Right, but
everyone's on edge.
This is why your timing, it means nothing.
Why?
Because today, on all days to get the IRS call,
yeah,
you get the four serious allegations against
right.
you. But most of the other complaints for this 206 number are they're stating that it's the IRS, which I got one of those, and it was so funny because it's like, there is a lien against your property if you don't contact us right now. And by the way, this is the IRS.
Oh, they
and
said
it's some
it was the
dude
IRS.
On a speakerphone. Like, all right, first of all, and this came out before that a lot of people were getting these types of calls, the IRS is not going to call you. They are going to send you a letter.
Right.
And the local authorities, Bill, are not going to call you and give you a little heads up to get away. They're going to just come to your house.
If any of this were true and I had committed some awful crime, I've watched enough television and seen enough movies to know that they rarely call your cell phone. They surround you and
exactly.
then they bring you in. They get the FBI and stuff. And
they're not going to give you a heads up.
Right. Right. You've committed a horrible crime. Could you just call and make this right so we don't have to come and get you? They don't do that.
But our question, we know it's a scam. And Renee evidently got the same scam. But what are they trying to get from us? Hi, Renee.
I don't know. I've never called them, but our town has a little Facebook group, and some people were alarmed about this last week. I've been getting these calls for 6 or 8 months. I can see it on the caller ID. They call every day, probably at 9 and 10 a.m. It's always that Seattle number. Sometimes I get the IRS message. Sometimes I get I'm under investigation. And sometimes it's a man with a British accent. And
oh.
He always says that the magistrate is going to, you know, who uses magistrate, is going to be contacted. But some people in our town were really upset. They thought it was a real thing. I was surprised that not elderly people would not know that it is a scam.
We can't figure out how they turn this into money. Like, they didn't ask me.
Someone said just call the number and pay whatever amount they ask for,
all
dummy.
Right. Maybe that's how. All right.
So, one of my friends says she always makes them wait, and then she gets an air horn, and they hang up right away when that happens.
Sure.
Yeah, but then just a different person from that organization calls her back.
The other thing that you can do is report this. If you're on the do not call list, there's if you go to ftc.gov, you can report this as a robocall and at least
nothing will happen.
I've done that.
I could try that. All right, that seems to make sense. It's your British phone call that disturbs me the most. I want a British phone call. I want to know that they're going to send some bobbies over to my house to bring me in.
Right.
Thank you so much, Renee. We appreciate
Thanks, Renee.
It.
Yeah, love the show. Bye.
Thank you.
A lot of people texting saying they've gotten three times this week.
I got it last year.
Now, was it the arrest or was it the IRS? Because I got the IRS.
Yeah, I got the IRS in the call. And
Bill's
was
worse than we are. He's got four serious allegations against him.
Seriously. I had serious allegations. And actually, I was a little rattled by it at first because, you know, I got my wife called. She said, you know, you got this call and call the number.
But, Steve, you know that that's not the way that either the police or the IRS operate. They don't call you first.
You don't think that. And honestly, right. These poor elderly people that really...
Such as myself.
No, I'm not saying that.
No, but I mean, I do my own taxes, you know, and it's like there's this lien and I have my own business and I'm like, oh my God, you know.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I eventually realized it was a scam, but there were a few minutes where I'm like, I was a little taken aback by it, worried about it.
So is the next step in this process, if I'm to call this number and try to make things right, because I don't want to go to jail, is the next step in this is they say, you got to send us a check for X amount of dollars or give us your credit card number. Is that what they're going to do next?
Can we call them on the air and find out what they're going to do?
Yeah. Do you want to? If we can.
Maybe we should do that. Let's take a quick break and find out if that's good to go.
All right.
Because I would
do
like
we have to warn them that they're on the air? They're scamming us. Can we scam them back?
I don't think so.
Oh.
We'll have to get management in on this. Right. But I also have the National Do Not Call Registry. Submit a complaint, and I think we should definitely file that
number. Give them their number. All right.
But I'm not putting my name because I don't want to lean on my property or for serious altercations.
You don't need that.
No.
You don't need that. All right. We'll figure this out. If you have a call or a question, 312-981-7200, Bill and Wendy, WGN. Plan your home improvement and your DIY project Sunday mornings on WGN-TV. Watch House Smarts with Lou Manfredini. That's at 10:30, and that's followed by Weekend Workbench, and that's at 11.
All right, I don't know how to... I feel like Bill now. Now I know how it feels to go. I don't know how to work the phone.
This is really frustrating. I want to play for you and for everybody the phone message that I received earlier this morning. They claim that I'm in trouble with the law, that there have been four allegations. I think they say serious allegations, I think.
Of course, it's you.
And if I don't call this number, which is located in Seattle, Washington, that local police authorities will come by and get me, and then I guess bring me to jail, right? So as we all hope, this is a scam. But
it's a scam.
It's got to be.
Everyone else has said the same thing's happening.
But, Mike, what I can't figure out is how they turn this scam into profit. Like, what are they doing? I've not given them any information. I haven't called the number yet. So I'm guessing if we call them, they will say that for a nominal fee, they'll be willing to overlook whatever horrible crime I've committed, right?
Here's my question. What if, like, you did commit, not you, but you in
somebody
general.
Somebody else.
Really committed some heinous crime that you've gotten away with for, like, 20 years. And all of a sudden you get this call and you're like, holy moly.
That would be bad.
I'm not calling.
That would be bad. And then you split.
You move town.
Right.
Kevin, can you call this? I don't know how to work the phone. I gave you the number. This is the number, the return. And it does show up, so it doesn't say call blocked or anything?
No. So we'll call them and I'll see. Now, do I have to legally say that they're on the radio? I don't know. But they're scam artists, so the laws should be changed for them. I shouldn't have to tell them that they're on the radio.
Technically, you should ask them if we have their permission
to put them on the air. All right. But they'll say no to that. These people are very savvy.
I'm sure it's just going to be some kind of recording.
Oh, will it be?
I don't know. Let me know when it's ringing,
Kevin.
That's
bad for business.
If they're scamming people,
you put somebody in the office.
Oh, it's busy, huh?
It is?
That is just so amazing to me.
That indicates that they've done this to people all day long.
They're still doing
it. They're printing money over at this place.
Although, really, people, scammers from the 206 area code, use the IRS one today.
Today would be the best day to use that one.
Oh, my God. This is like an extension. Right. You have the 18th to the 18th. Usually it's the 15th, but because of the Emancipation Proclamation, we have extra time.
That's right.
Use the IRS scam. Don't say that we have four serious allegations. Is it ringing or still busy?
He's trying it right now.
It's ringing, I think.
All right.
Can you put me on the air? Well, I am on the air. No, just let it. Let's hear it ring.
We can hear it ring.
Just we'll handle it.
All right.
There we go. He can't do it. Can I do it? Can I press a button? I hate when people say button. A button.
Shouldn't they also? I mean, I don't know all the laws, obviously, but shouldn't they tell me which crime I've committed?
No, because they want you to fess up. What are the odds that somebody has committed a crime and they call and they go, listen, I just stole a boat from my neighbor one time. It wasn't really that good of a boat.
Well, it's the trick that moms and dads have played forever when they say to their kid, I think you know what you've done, even though the parent doesn't know. You're getting a confession. Or like when a police officer pulls you over and they say, I think you know why I pulled you
over. They can't do that. They have to tell you why. Talk to Sandra Bland's family.
Oh.
You now have to say, you know, why are you pulling me over? They have to tell you.
But prior to this, didn't they say, because I remember once or twice a police officer would say to me, I think you know why I've pulled you over, right?
I've never had that happen.
Oh, yeah.
Remember, I'm the one that says, I really didn't come to a complete stop. And he says, that's not why I'm pulling you over, but thanks.
Oops. Too much. Don't look in the trunk. I'd say that.
No answer?
Nothing in the trunk.
It's just ringing and ringing and ringing and ringing.
Oh, man. What? These are the worst scam artists of all time.
You can't even reach them.
If I had a scam going, the first thing I would do is I'd put people in the home office and make sure when the calls come in that they're ready to take their information.
Bill, if I were you, I'd be worried about the local authorities. I tried calling for you.
I am a little worried about local authorities.
All right, now somebody else is doing our work because somebody, after Googling Bill's phone scammer, it appears they either want his personal info for identity theft purposes or a check or credit card info. But excuse me, who is going to give that stuff? I mean, today, no one.
If they say it in a certain way, and there are plenty of people who are gullible enough to where they hear this and they go, oh, no, I have to go to jail? It's worth $150 for me to not go to jail.
Bill,
I just picked the number out at random.
I know,
by
but
the way.
Unless you have a guilty conscience, you would not pay anything.
I wouldn't pay anything.
815 says, got the IRS call today. The cops may be picking me up.
Oh, no. Well, at least I'll know somebody in the big house. At least it's a listener. We'll have something to talk about.
A lot of spam. And I mean, really, this has been going on for a while. Hi, Ken. What happened to you?
Hi, good afternoon. A couple of months ago, my son is a senior at Eastern Illinois. And we got a phone call. It was an 887 number. And they said it was Sergeant something from the Illinois State Police Department. And that they had our son and that he was in jail. And that he we needed to bail him out.
All right, hang on. All right. On line six. Hi there, Officer Patrick.
Yeah, I'm here.
Hi, we're live on the air, WGN Radio, and we wanted to ask a few questions about this phone number. Bill, you received a call with this phone number as the return call?
It said that there are four allegations against me, and the last thing I want to do is go to jail. What do I do to not go to jail?
Sir, do you think I'm a fool sitting over here?
I do not.
Don't call me back anymore.
Don't call us.
You left a message saying to call you there.
Not to give me a call back.
All right. We had to use our delay system. Kevin, you can deal with him now.
Wendy, I'm relatively sure that that was not a police officer.
We should call him back and tell him to clean up his language.
I'm hoping that wasn't on the air,
okay,
right?
Okay. No, both Kevin and I hit the dump button. But all right. And
well,
that
you cancel each other out then.
Oh, well, then you heard the MF. All I have to tell you is don't leave a callback number then. Like, don't you call me here. But that's the number you have to call him back, Bill.
Right. I would not do business with that man again. That's a one and out for me.
I'm telling you, we cannot pull the wool over your eyes.
The local authorities don't sound that local either. And
no.
Did
rude.
You hear the dudes in the background on all the speaker saying the same thing? There
Lots
are four allegations against you. There's 10 people in a room.
Right.
Thanks and we're not supposed to call them.
Thanks for using my name, by the way, in that. You gave him my name. He's mad at me. And he's got an in with local authorities.
And he has your number.
Yeah, he does. Thanks for that.
I didn't know we had to change our names. Yeah. You know?
I would have used a fake name. But
we'll call back and use a different name.
Right. Can we do that? That'd be great.
Okay. See, I totally don't get what's going on here because I know we said we were on the radio, and that's what made him
not,
go.
I'm positive.
Yeah, but you got to. Because.
But these guys are scam artists. I think, don't the rules go out the window if they're trying to scam us? We can scam them back, can't we?
I don't think legally we can.
Oh.
Because they're doing something illegal.
Oh. All right, there's that. But,
but if you're a little nicer, maybe we'll call you back and give you our credit card number.
But if you weigh the two options, him trying to get my credit card number as opposed to me not telling him he's on the radio, that's not even close, I don't think.
Take it up with the FCC. I'm not going
to
do it.
You have to. I'm going to jail.
Are we sure Kevin dialed the right number?
No, he did dial the right number.
Yeah, and did you hear, don't call me at this number? Well, that's the number you provided. What, you want to give us your home one?
I just looked up local authorities in the phone book, and that's the number I got.
That's not disconcerting at all.
And I hate to say this. God love you, but Bill is a pretty common name. I think you're good.
I think you gave him my last name, too, didn't you?
No.
You didn't? I thought I
did when I called
him. Oh, you did? Thanks, yeah. Kevin. Thank you.
And address. Well,
and home address. Yeah.
You wanted him to have access to the records to find out what the offenses were.
All right, that's true. All right, I feel better now.
I can't believe that at all. This is some dude sitting in, you know, a whole bunch of them sitting there making these calls. But again, I'm not getting what, like, say that we did ask them, like, and they were nice to us.
Right.
Like, oh, I'm just trying to find out what's against me. What do? We take your credit card number and then we can erase all these charges?
I'm positive.
Who is going to fall for that?
Somebody must. Even if you're batting one out of 100, if you could get that guy for a couple of $100, that's not a bad day for them, right?
Oh, it's a bad day for him. Potty mouth.
I know. It's the swearing that bothers me, Wendy. I'm sorry you had to hear that foul language. All right, we'll take a quick break and then we'll solve more crimes. It's Crime Busters on WGN.
March, how many kids do we have? Oh, no time to count. I'll just estimate. 9.
Oh, you know we don't have...
Shut up. If I don't hear you, it's not illegal. Okay, I need some deductions. Oh, business gifts. Here you go. Keep using nuclear power.
Homer, I painted that for you.
Okay, Marge, if anyone asks, you require 24-hour nursing care. Lisa's a clergyman. Maggie is 7 people, and Bart was wounded in Vietnam.
Cool.
All right, today is the day we pay the tax man, and, you know, Bill and I are just trying to solve crimes and help everyone and protect people against scammers, and someone has texted and says, since we're out solving mysteries, I'm definitely Daphne, although I'd prefer to be Velma.
Well, Daphne was prettier, Velma a little smarter, so you choose. So you can't lose either way.
All right, would Bill be Fred, Shaggy, or Scooby? Extra points for Bill if he knows the characters' last names. Putting you on the spot, I'm scamming you.
I don't know their last names.
Well, I've got a guy in a 206 area code who would like to hear the last names if you'd like to call him off the air.
All right, I'll give him a call.
Can I be the Harlem Globetrotters or Batman?
Yeah.
He would always help. Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely.
Ryan Burrow's in the studio because I'm still waiting to hear from my accountant to find out how much I owe, and then I will have to file electronically before midnight tonight.
Yeah, 11:59. Although, didn't you file last year? You don't have to worry about it this year, right?
You have to do it every year,
do
you?
I filed for an extension.
I was telling Bill off air, you know, this is kind of weird. I went over to the main office, the post office, and they're going to be open till midnight there, but most of the local post office will not be open till midnight. This used to be a big thing. You remember? People would go. It would almost be like a party, you know, when you'd go to the post office and people would be filing at the last moment and they'd be giving out freebies to people.
Sure.
And, you know, businesses.
Cups of coffee.
Exactly. They'd always be doing that. That doesn't really exist anymore.
There were people street side all the time, so you would pull up next to the post office and they would come out
with
and give
a big
you a receipt.
Basket. And can I tell you, what few things I remember about my dad, even if he had already filled things out, he would wait till midnight so we could drive down there to do it because it was a big thing.
Sure. Yeah. They don't do that anymore. Most of the post offices don't do that. There are a handful across the country that will be open till midnight, although some of them are open till midnight anyways, like the big, the main post office down here downtown.
Right.
Some will extend their hours to maybe 7 o'clock, but we're all e-filing now. I think they said in 2015, 90% of us e-filed our taxes. So, you know, the days of going to the mailbox and dropping it in, it's not existing anymore.
You know where you're saving? You always had to, well, you didn't have to do this, but it was a good idea to send it registered mail and you'd fill out extra coupons and forms. I always did because if it got lost in transit.
And now look, you have four
altercations. Now I'm going to jail anyway. It doesn't matter.
You can get the, what is it, the the tracking, right. Tracking oh, yeah. on it now.
Tracking
right
number.
There
and, yeah. and then they would send you a postcard back in a week saying we did receive it in time.
You know what? If they didn't get it, that's the post office's fault.
Well, you would think, except I guess if there was precedent where if people, you know, sent it in and it didn't get successfully through, you were liable for it, even though it's the post office's fault. They had no proof of it, sure. you sending it.
And the IRS is going to look at the date when it was stamped and see right. if it was today, the 18th. And right. if it was after that, then uh-oh. Yeah.
So by filing electronically, what you also do is if you have money coming back, you tend to get that quite a bit faster, too, don't
Unless
you?
You're in Illinois when they hold the refunds in a month.
That was my next that? Question. Yeah, is yeah. that with the Illinois budget being what it is, are refunds going to take longer to
well,
get out?
Well, they have been going out. Hopefully, if you filed early, that money should be coming to you
People
already.
People already they had their yeah,
they,
refunds.
Did they?
They held that money, though. I mean, if you were on top of your game at, you know, New Year's morning, boy, there's nothing quite like putting your taxes together on New Year's Day morning and got it out. You weren't going to get that refund, at least the Illinois one, until March 1st was when those were going to start going
out. That was
out.
The story. You know Max Armstrong here at WGN.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
The legend on him was always that that's what he spent New Year's Day
New
doing
Year's
was
Day.
His taxes
wake
every
up,
year.
Wake up at 6 a.m., right?
Yeah. And, Yep.
Yeah, I guess that's smart to get it out of the way, but really, who's going to want to? I don't even want to think about it till today.
I know.
Are there some freebies going
yeah,
on?
Yeah, so it's not so much that the people are getting in line at the post office anymore and getting those freebies, the cups of coffee or the, you know, the hamburger or whatever. Now you get the freebies via apps and coupons. So we can just run through some of these. Staples, if you need to do some document shredding today, 5 pounds of documents you can shred at Staples. Outback Steakhouse, 15% off your check with a coupon. Noodles and Company, buy an entree, get a kid's meal for free, or you can order online. Use a tax code TAXDAY for $4 off a $10 order. So
oh, that's not good.
Yeah, we got some Boston Market's got a deal. Hard Rock Cafe, there's one right downtown here. If you sing on stage, you get your burger for free.
Yeah, really? I would go there every day and get a free burger. It's just today?
I believe it's just today. It's just a tax day special. Hmm. So yeah.
I need printer cartridges. That's what I need. They should be a
Could
discount
Wendy
on
sing,
those at Office Max.
If she went to Office Max and
Office
sang a song.
Max, shred some paper and yeah, sing a song. I don't know if it works.
That might not work.
Know. You can say Ryan Burrow told me, and let's see how it goes.
That'll
over.
Make a big difference.
Sure.
Does H&R Block still exist? Because there was
yeah.
a time where during they the do. Months of March and April, every block of commercials had at least one H&R Block. Henry Block for H&R Block. I don't
well,
remember the last
Henry,
time
I
saw.
Henry, I don't think is any.
Is he no longer with us?
I don't think so, but man. I've seen a bunch of H&R
yeah,
Block
they
commercials.
Still are?
They pop up, and you know Jackson Hewitt's the other one, a tax preparer, yeah. and you just got to be careful because I know the Attorney General, the Illinois Attorney General, Lisa Madigan, says there are some situations where tax preparers will offer you your money up front. You know, and do it in a certain way where, you know, you're getting charged for it.
Oh, no.
So you just have to be very, very careful about
these
you
are
know,
tax
how you
day
these...
loans? Are these
yeah,
considered
essentially
tax, day,
tax
loans?
Day loans. You just have to be very, very careful about, you know, going through that process. Although
sure.
at this point, you know, now that we're kind of in the crunch time, you know, it's more people just trying to get it in the mail.
And yeah.
A couple of things to keep in mind, too. First of all, if you've got more than 4 pieces of paper in the envelope, USPS says add an additional stamp just to be safe. You know, you don't want to put it in the mail and it
right.
get kicked back to you, you know, a week later and go, oh, it didn't get there in time.
Yeah.
The other thing is to make sure that if you are dropping it in a box this evening, check and see what time the pickup is. You know, you could drop it off at 7:05 and think you're fine because everyone seems to be filing their taxes later today. But if they picked up at 7 o'clock, not good.
I think to be safe, take it to the post office. I wouldn't put it in a box just to be safe.
Would be safe. I mean, if you put it in a box right now and the pickup's not till 5 o'clock, you're probably fine. But,
yeah.
You know, better safe than sorry, I guess.
Wow.
I'm just checking to see if my accountant got a hold of me yet because I got to get this going. Although with the e-filing, you do it instantly.
You can do it instantly, and there are obviously opportunities to extend if you're, you know, really struggling right now. The extension deadline is well, you have to obviously apply now, but the extension deadline would be in October.
And that's what we're doing because we just didn't get everything together. But
yeah.
if you owe money, you have to pay some portion of it or at least what you think you're
sure.
going to owe. So it's not like you can just file something and go, oh, yeah, I need more time. You have to either yourself or find an accountant to fill stuff out and guess to your best guesstimate and in good faith figure out how much you owe, and you have to send the money today.
Yeah, and they'll figure it out. It'll all get sorted out. The government will get its money if it needs money from you.
But with fines, you know?
Yeah, no, exactly. Now, I can tell you today at some of the post office, there are some lines, you know, it's normal run-of-the-mill mail on top of the people who are filing for the last day. You know, there. I was at the Merchandise Mart, and, you know, the line did go out the door, but it was lunchtime. I mean, that tends to happen. Same thing at the Thompson Center, maybe some of your smaller postal services. So just beware. It's tax day. Go get the freebie noodles or burger.
Yeah. Will this affect my Amazon order that I ordered? But no, because it's not mail, right?
Your Amazon order that you ordered?
I ordered a boombox, a cassette boombox, because so Dylan's blasting into the 2016.
When did you order that?
I ordered it yesterday, but it's supposed to arrive today, and I want to make sure the mail doesn't screw it up.
You're nervous that your postal worker is slammed with other stuff that you're not going to get yours. I can tell you that as of just a few years ago, they were doing about 100 million pieces of mail a day on tax day. Today they're doing about 65 million.
Oh,
so
man.
I mean, it's just that shows you the impact of the online filing. Now, obviously, those 100 million aren't necessarily all tax documents, and today's 65 million aren't all tax documents. But just shows you kind of how we've come down, and everything's online now.
Ryan, thank you. We appreciate it. It's Ryan Burrow from upstairs in the news department. We'll take a. Forgive me for not knowing this, but I don't know if you're kidding or not. Did you really just order a boombox? You did. Didn't you?
Just sometimes you should think twice about having kids. That's all I'm warning people.
Are your boys going to a Pointer Sisters concert sometime in the near future?
No. We went to Record Store Day, and we popped into Val Camaletti's place, Valhalla in Oak Park, on Saturday. And, you know, my 16-year-old is way into records, as a lot of 16-year-olds are, and adults.
Mm-hmm.
I've never stopped being into records.
Mm-hmm.
And Dylan is not really... Michael loved the albums, and then Dylan kind of felt left out. So he's like, I'm going to start collecting cassettes.
Oh.
And Michael and I said, that's a stupid idea.
Good encouragement.
We didn't, but great. We thought it. That's what the thought
right.
bubble said.
All right.
So and it's great because Dylan is a drummer who's put drums on the hold for a little bit. He said, I'll get back to it later. Well, now he's getting all the Van Halens on cassette and The Who and Bob Dylan. And it's like, oh, my God, thank God he's not listening to B96 music anymore.
Yeah.
So I encouraged it. And then he on the way home, he says, do we have a cassette player? I said, we have probably 50 in the house. Well, we had 5 and none of them work.
Got to get a new one.
Well, we did. We went to Goodwill, and we got one, and the speakers rocked, and the CD part of it worked, but the cassette motor was kind of burnt out. So I'm like, you know what? Let's just get you a CD boombox, and I laughed.
Something to be proud of.
I put my bell bottoms on and hit send.
That'll be a great gift for him. And maybe he and John Cusack can stand outside a girl's bedroom and play music really loud, some Peter Gabriel.
He had to have seen that movie because Dylan said, I want a square boombox, you know, so I can hold it on my shoulder. And I said, are you even kidding me?
Wow.
I said, they don't really make those anymore.
I don't know that they do they? I think those days are gone, I think.
Well, I found a good deal on a Sony one.
How did a generation of kids not get hernias from that?
Some of those boomboxes were just huge.
Yeah. My brother used to bring one when we'd go on vacation. He'd bring one with us when we'd go to Florida, and he would put it on the seat next to him on a plane. It was that big.
Did he have to pay for the seat?
No. He would carry it on, and his goal was to put it in overhead, but if there was nobody sitting next to him, he would just sit there with the boombox next to him.
We went to St. Lucia in Jamaica a couple times, and Jimmy Mack, I swear to God, brought every Led Zeppelin CD known to man.
Yeah.
This is what you did before MP3s, though.
Right.
We brought a boombox, and numerous people made fun of him because he had, like, binders full of Led Zeppelin music.
Yeah.
And Bob Marley. I said, you know, just bring one or two.
Would he play it real loud there on vacation?
Well, if we were in our room on the balcony, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, but you not don't think really people loudly.
In other could people in other rooms hear this, though?
I don't know.
Because a boombox is pretty loud, well, just by nature.
You don't. Crank it. I mean, if we were sitting out on the patio, we'd put it on.
Yeah.
What did your brother do with it?
He played it really loud. Like, everyone in the hotel knew my brother had his boombox. It was and I'd beg him. I'd go, can't you just, you could play that quieter. No, it's not as good if you play it quiet.
Well, he's right.
I guess.
What kind of music was it?
Kiss.
No.
Yeah, really loud Kiss. Really loud Kiss. Peter Criss called us one time and asked us to turn the music down. One of the guys from Kiss.
All right, well, somebody said my Amazon order will not be affected by all the IRS stuff. And somebody else says, 815, I really don't understand how one would be filing taxes today. First of all, why they extend the day because it's a weekend is beyond me. Well, we learned on this very show because of Emancipation Day.
Yeah, on Friday, right? So you can't have tax day on Emancipation Day.
Right.
Is that what it was? Yeah.
And somebody says, you know, we put it together as soon as we get W-2s. Everybody knows the day. Why wait?
I'm amazed by that, too.
Waited, too.
I handed mine in a little over a week ago, and it's still not done. I talked to my attorney on Saturday, my tax attorney.
You're still getting some things together.
Yeah, there were a couple of questions he had that he needed to check with, but that's cutting it too close for me. But only one time in my life have I sent it in on the 15th. It's always been prior to the 15th, but they do more volume today than any other day on the last day.
And all the accountants go to Mexico together afterwards. So this
right.
weekend they're gone.
Right. You can't get a room anywhere in Mexico. It's all CPAs everywhere.
No, and I always say, you know, I'm going to do it, because when do you get, you don't get your W-2s. I thought it was
in
February.
January or February, they start pouring in.
So yeah. How can Max Armstrong do it on New Year's Day?
I can't figure that out either. Like, even if I wanted to do it, our information comes all through January, February, and sometimes into March. I don't know how people do it that first week in January.
Although you can go online and look at your pay stubs and figure it out, but I have like 25 jobs.
Yeah, I know.
I'm a waitress sometimes.
Sure. Lion Tamer.
Mrs. Fix-It. Not to be confused with Mr. Fix-It.
No,
I don't want anybody to think me and Lou have something going on.
If you do, you do. That's your business. That's your business.
No, it isn't. Quick break, and then we've got news coming up next. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN.
Our Cubs versus those Cardinals. Let the battle begin. Watch game one of the series that's between these two heated rivals tonight at 7, only on WGN Sports on My 50. That's WPWR, My 50.
And Tamar Manassa is in the studio with us, president and founder of Mothers Against Senseless Killings. It has it's expanded now to New York City. Tamar, there have been a couple of texts that came over during the commercial break. Is it too late for this lady to run for president?
Oh, I tried. I tried.
Did you?
I did. I tried. Yeah. No. Tell them, God bless them. Nope. Can't do president.
Not for you? No.
All right.
Well, you'd need a lot of money to get all these endorsements and be in your campaign. But doesn't it make sense to have somebody who wants to truly help, at least mayor?
You know, I haven't really seen where it seems to me that when you become an elected official, it seems like that's the day you can't help anybody anymore, really. It just seems like, you know, something happens and you're not necessarily public servant so much, even though that's what you're called, but not really. You're right. Serving somebody is just not necessarily the public all the time.
That's it. And someone else said, praise your guest. It does take a village to raise a child. They need to know someone cares about them. Way to go, girl.
God bless you. Thank you so much.
And, you know, when you're thinking about it, I mean, we have a great neighborhood where I grew up in the suburbs and we know our neighbors. Mm-hmm. And I almost feel that when the kids know the parents and the parents know the kids behave better because they're like, oh, God.
They're being watched.
Yes.
It's
they're going to tell my mom
eye.
If
exactly.
I am, you know,
yeah,
doing
and my mom's crazy and I don't want her to know that I did that. Yeah.
Wait, my kids have talked to you because I am crazy.
Exactly. Yeah. You're doing it right then. If your parents think, if your children think you're sane and you're a mom, you are not getting it right.
Several calls for you at 312-981-7200. Should we start with
Phil? Phil's got a great question.
Let's talk to Phil. Hey, Phil.
This is Tamar.
Yes, good. First, I'd like to commend you for you and your organization and the things that you're looking to accomplish and the things that you have done.
Thank you
so much. Many more of us should get behind you with financial support as well. And that leads up to my question. You look at Reverend Sharpton and Reverend Jackson's organizations. Both of them have really tremendous financial tools that they've used from time to time. What kind of financial support have you received from either of those two individuals?
Nothing.
What about locally? What about the alderman? What about Mayor Rahm Emanuel?
Nothing.
Well, wait, just a minute, Wendy. That's still my question. Why have they not given you that kind of support. It seems like they're working diligently to promote the other side of it. And that's just an observation.
And you know, it feels like that. I'm hoping that, I mean, last summer we managed to prove something and we proved that we were worthy of the support. I'm hoping that that's what we proved. But even if we didn't manage to prove that to people like Rahm Emanuel or other elected officials or Reverend Sharpton or Reverend Jackson, it doesn't matter. The show still must go on. And like, it's really literally these tiny contributions that we get from people like you. Just here and there that keeps it going. And we always talk about, and it comes out of my own pocket sometimes, and we always talk about nobody ever starved from feeding someone else. Nobody ever went hungry from feeding the hungry. So we just do what we have to do. I mean, it's disheartening sometimes, but we get so much support from the community and so much love from the community that we can't get hung up on that. We have to keep going. I'm hoping that they're listening.
I know that's not a matter of getting hung up on, but they would come out and speak up for your organization. I think that would increase not only the community awareness of what it is that you're trying to do, but the financial support from those individuals within that community.
Absolutely.
I think those voices are strong voices, and because they've proven it to be pretty strong in one direction, I really think they should get behind you. And have they talked to you at all? Have you talked to them at all?
Not one time. I have too much work to do too much talking to people.
But you have so much to gain by making a phone call.
You know, here's the thing about that. Your voice right now is just as powerful as theirs is to me.
Yeah, really you write to them, Phil.
Your voice is just as powerful. People are hearing what you say, and you are just another concerned parent and another concerned citizen of this city. So right now, you have power. Just the same way you hear me on this radio, believe me, someone who knows all of these people do too. And if they wanted to help, and if they wanted to be a part of this, they would have reached out the same way that you did. So right now,
are they aware of your organization?
Absolutely, they're aware.
And they're just ignoring any kind of financial support. If they think it was such a great thing, why aren't they supporting?
Hey, I guess. I don't know. That would be a good question. Call them and ask them.
Yeah, Phil, you can be their support too. Thank you so much for calling. So no support like locally either. Mayor Rahm Emanuel, you would think this would be a perfect opportunity to show how love and caring and consideration and community can really help build the city.
Yeah. You know, the cure. You want to know what the cure for this is. With an incredibly high unemployment rate like the one we have in this city, if the mayor would say, hey, you know what? I'll forgive a parking ticket or one of those red light tickets or that garbage tax for this year if you go out and you join an organization that helps keep peace. Not just even my organization, but I mean, there are dozens like mine. Just to do something, because the more people that are out there for good, the bigger the gang for good gets, the smaller every other gang gets. But of course, they wouldn't do that. If people have an incentive to join groups like this, then the crime rate would plummet tremendously. I hope they're listening, but I'm sure they aren't. I'm sure they aren't. But that would really help. That would go far.
What a great idea, though. You know,
it's a great idea.
Cut your ticket in half, or we'll rip up your red light camera ticket if you do some.
I get that the city is broke. I get that the city can't afford it, but can we afford more murders? Can you afford more 1-year-olds being shot in the head? Can we really afford that? I mean, so what is? I mean, you want to save lives or save money? You know, we hear about hard choices that we as Americans have to make every day.
Yeah.
This is a hard choice that he would have to make for Chicago.
Right. I love the idea. I mean, I know you're losing the revenue of a $75 or an $85 ticket, but what you're gaining is somebody's life potentially and all the residual
damage.
And people
aren't moving out of your city.
Right.
Like, I mean, they are fleeing the plague.
Right.
That they aren't leaving like that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, in a way, you're still keeping revenue. You're gaining because people aren't leaving.
It's a smart idea.
All right. Now, I have a text here from someone, 312, and I'm not judging, but it's a valid question for somebody who doesn't understand here. What your guest is doing, grassroots community activism for the good, is what is necessary. However, it would go a long way if the word father was in the title and the activism. Now, you are the president and founder of Mothers Against Senseless Killings, MASC, but for people who are unaware, Tamar, don't you also work with another organization?
I also am the president and founder of Men Against Senseless Killing, and this is a little known fact. There are more men involved than there are mothers.
Nice.
there are actually far more men involved.
You brought a representative in with you last time you were over.
Absolutely. They've been here. And it's kind of like people sometimes don't see them because they don't want to see them.
Yeah.
And I mean, maybe because they don't wear pink shirts, because sometimes men can really protest wearing pink t-shirts. So, I mean, maybe then they would be seen. But I am so proud of the men that are involved in mass. Some of them aren't even fathers, but they still are mentors and they still have something to contribute and something to offer. And they are very important. So when people say, oh, well, where are the men and where are the fathers?
And a lot of people do say
that. All the time. And they're there. Like right now, Daryl is working a barbecue grill. I can't cook. I can't barbecue. He won't let me touch it. But I mean, I thank God for them every day, because everything that society tells us about what these men are, they turn it on its ear every single day.
And so some of these kids that have these issues don't have fathers. So these men that are in Men Against Senseless Killings are their mentors, are their father figures. You're not denying the fact that there are some fathers missing in the immediate family.
I'm not denying that. And they may be
missing.
Some
mothers missing, too.
Exactly. But like I said, we're family. So that means you might have... You might go out on the corner and you might find a father figure or a big brother or uncle or cousin. You find someone to connect with, someone that exists within a regular family unit, a mother figure, a father figure, you know, sisters and brothers. You can make those kind of relationships because that's what we provide. And I really can't say enough. Good men are not unicorns. They exist. I deal with them every single day.
I work with one.
So. Yeah, he's wonderful.
But there are great guys in this world. And maybe there are some great guys like listener Phil who was calling. How do you help? You don't have to be an African-American person to help, do you?
Absolutely not. No, absolutely not. This is about building community. And don't we all live in communities?
Yep.
Now, what the state of your community or my community may be might be a little different. But yet we all still want the same thing. We want for our children to grow up safe. We want them to live and prosper. We some of us want grandchildren, some don't, but it's okay. But that's what we want. We want our children to grow up healthy and happy. That's all we all want. That's what we all have in common. And that's what strong communities provide.
And how do we contribute? You can go to getbehindthemask.org to find out more information. Mm-hmm. There's a donation page. Also a GoFundMe account.
And we have GoFundMe. And we're also this week, if you go to our website, www.getbehindthemask.org, you can actually, it would be great if you would come pay us a visit on the block. Come hang out with us. Come eat a hamburger. Come eat a piece of chicken. Come play cards. Come do some Twister or some Yahtzee or dominoes or something. Just come
out. You didn't
mention
Yahtzee. You should have said that at the beginning.
Yeah, we have that there.
All right, we're in.
Yeah, just come out. And every day we're on seven different blocks for 7 days for this whole week. And I mean, just come out and just say, hey, how you doing?
Good.
You know, come meet us. Yeah.
I know you don't do this to get thank you, but thank you for doing this. Everybody hears about stuff like this, but you jump and do something. So good for you.
It's in all of us. Yeah, it's in all of us to do it.
I know.
And it's growing because you started it. So
and if I wasn't a psycho soccer mom, this wouldn't have ever happened. Like if I could actually let my kids be like 5 feet out of my eyesight for 10 minutes, this wouldn't be happening. But yeah.
Good. I'm glad it's happening. Tamar, thank you so much.
Thank you
for
having me. And I will see you guys next time because I'm sure it'll be a next time.
God bless you.
Thank you.
All right. A quick break and then more show coming your way next. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
It's Bill Leff, it's Wendy Snyder, and we have a fantastic prize to give away, and we're trying to come up with the bestest, fairest way to do it.
This is, by the way, this is a spectacular prize. You know, the Blackhawks right now are in the middle of their Stanley Cup playoff series with the St. Louis Blues. They're down by a game. They're down 2-1.
Not panicking yet.
No one's panicking, but we want to give everybody hope, don't we?
Yes. And what better hope than to wear it loud, wear it proud. We have a $100 gift card for the Blackhawks store, and there are several locations. In Chicago, the flagship store right behind us.
You can see it from our window, can't you? It's right over there.
Oak Brook Center, which I have frequented,
although
it's not as big as the flagship store. And I haven't been to the Old Orchard one.
I've been in that store.
And, of course, the United Center. This is compliments of Village of Bedford Park, helping you gear up for the playoffs with the new Blackhawks swag. Village of Bedford Park, think about relocating your business for success. And we're trying to think of a fair way to do it. Now, people are calling right now.
Oh, they are. Yeah. Well, they won't win.
Well, right, because we're going to clear the lines and yeah. we have a way. We were going to do a Blackhawks question, but I'm a relatively new Blackhawks fan. I liked them years ago. Then I went away for a while because I couldn't really watch them on TV. And
a lot of people have a similar story.
Yes.
Yeah.
And now I've come back and I'm rabid.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a rabid fan, but I may not know all these trivia questions, but yet I like to go shopping and I like to buy stuff at the Blackhawks store.
Right.
We just bought something at the United Center, a Blues and Blackhawks puck to commemorate the first series.
Oh, nice. Very nice.
And a little magnet for my car.
Oh.
And I've fully decided that I'm getting the Blackhawks plates because I have to do it.
The dinnerware?
No.
Blackhawks dinnerware?
License plate.
Oh, the license plate. Okay. I thought you were going to spruce up a dinner party with some nice china from the Blackhawks
no,
store.
No, but that's a great idea.
Yeah, yeah.
So is that kind of what we're looking for?
Yeah. Here's the game, everybody. You give us a call at 312-981-7200, and this is the one time you are fully allowed to lie. Tell us what you're going to buy at the Blackhawks store for $100. But if what you're buying isn't true, if you're making something up, a product that doesn't exist, but you think it'd be a fun thing to have, let us know what it is. And the biggest, bestest lie wins the $100 gift card to the Blackhawks store.
I kind of like that, and we are three judges, kind of like when I said Blackhawks plates, you thought it would be service for 12 or something.
Yeah, they don't really make, I don't think they make Blackhawks plates,
they
but
should.
If they did, they could sell those at the Blackhawks store. So you come up with something, it could be with one member of the team, it could be the entire Blackhawks team, just a product that they would sell that you would buy at the Blackhawks store, and we will decide between you and Kevin and myself who's the most creative.
So we'll clear the lines, 312-981-7200. Kevin will just ask your name and put your name up, and we will go through these after this.
Yep. That's how it works.
$100, $100 gift card for the Blackhawks store. Locations in Chicago, Oak Brook, Old Orchard, and the UC. Brought to you by Village of Bedford Park. Think about relocating your business for success. Oh, I'm getting psyched. I'm not panicking yet, Bill.
No, there's no reason to panic. The Blackhawks are losing to the St. Louis Blues just 2-1 in the first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs. Nothing to worry about.
As Doc Emmerich says, that's why there are 7 games.
He's right. He's absolutely right. We have a $100 gift card to the Blackhawks store, 4 great locations, one near you. All you need to do is tell us what you would spend the $100 on should you win at the Blackhawks store. But here's a nice thing. You get to lie. You get to make up a product that doesn't actually exist. The most creative person wins a $100 gift card to the Blackhawks store.
All right, let's start with Larry. Larry, what are you going to get at the Blackhawks store?
Oh, I don't want to lie, but I'm 63 years old, and I like the old Hawks. And anything Bobby Hall related, a stick or a puck for my bar downstairs, I just think I like the old Hawks. He had a fantastic slap shot. Timed at a little over 119 miles an hour, and I don't think that'll ever be duplicated, and that's what I think I'd go for.
He's the Golden Jet, Wendy.
I know
the
he is.
Jet. Bobby Hall, not Larry. Larry, you're not the Golden Jet, are you? It's Bobby Hall, right?
Right.
All right,
right.
You're in the running.
All right, hang on. I may not be that creative.
Larry, not a fan of lying. Larry, very honest.
So he has to be sort of rewarded for that.
All right. We'll give him a point or two for honesty, sure.
Okay. And you know, not that creative, but definitely a Blackhawks fan.
Without
See
a
why
doubt.
This is hard to
it
do?
It is tough, right.
Greg, what about you?
Hey, Bill, I wanted that book of Tori's Sucking Up. I love your show. You both play
That's not going to help, but thank
no,
you.
No, it helped on my end.
Oh.
But that helped. You win.
Maybe I'm lying.
No, he didn't win. You did not win. Oh, maybe he's lying.
Oh, good. So what would you buy?
The product that I would buy is the Patrick Kane 88 Blackhawks hat with a fake mullet in the back.
The hat with the mullet in the back, sure.
Although he's not growing the mullet this year for the playoff, right. He should change his mind on that one.
We need some mojo going.
I got you. All right, the mojo mullet. Hang on, Greg. That's a good idea.
Why don't they sell those? Blackhawk hats, Patrick Kane hats with the mullet already put inside. I like that idea.
That is a great mm-hmm. idea. We didn't lose our first caller, did we, I hope? Jim, you're on.
How about a Zamboni cooler?
A Zamboni cooler. Now, how would that work exactly?
Well, you open up the front of the Zamboni, and you'd have a cooler there. And be able to have your beer ready for you're watching the game.
And you know what? I'll help you embellish a little bit, Jim. You could actually get it remote controlled so you could steer it over to your friend who's on another couch. He's in the recliner over by there.
That's good.
I like the addition.
All right, hang on, Jim.
So if Jim gets it, he'd have to split it with you, it sounds like.
No, he can have it.
All right.
All right, Tony, what's your embellished idea?
Oh, boy, Jim read my mind, but I'm going to get a small version of the Zamboni, and we do a little tailgate in our neighborhood before every game, and it's going to be a ride. I'm going to have to beep up the suspension because I'm 6 foot 250 and both my friends are, too.
Wow.
But I say whoever tailgates the hardest, we put a gray suit on him and put the big fluffy Quinville mustache on him and make him go around the neighborhood blowing the air horn.
Not bad. I like that.
All right, I like that. I bet that would be more than $100, though.
Tony had a whole day planned. It wasn't just a product. He was telling you the whole day.
Steve, if you're going to the Blackhawks store, what would you get?
I would try to get a gigantic banner with all their Blackhawks and all their autographs on. That would be great for my man cave in the garage, because that's where I listen to them on the radio.
On WGN, no doubt. All right, Steve. Cool. Hang on a minute.
I think Steve's actually exists, doesn't it? That you could probably buy that, couldn't you?
It's for a lot of money.
It would be
a
expensive,
banner with everybody's
sure.
autograph on it.
Yeah.
Dennis, what are you thinking?
Well, I'm going to take the pressure off everybody because I'm going to buy the Stanley Cup and give it to Chicago in perpetuity.
I'm almost positive the Stanley Cup would be more than $100. Not 1,000% sure, but fairly sure. But what a nice gesture, Dennis.
$99.79.
Oh, it is? It's under 100. Yeah. All right.
All right, hang on, Dennis. Again, creativity, what would you get if you were going to the Blackhawks store? Velma?
Okay, got to hear me out on this.
All right.
All right, so it would be a protector cup with the Blackhawks logo.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about, jockstrap.
Sure.
We just wanted to hear you say jockstrap, Velma. That was.
I had to. My boyfriend would wear anything because I'm going to tell him it's a new hat.
Good.
He would, I'm telling you. Would just dress him up at the game, put the hat on, you know, the jock strap.
Yep.
All right, a Blackhawks jock strap to cover your pucks.
She didn't say that.
Well, I helped her
All right.
a little bit.
All right.
All right, let's see what Beth has to say. Beth, what would you get at the Blackhawks store?
I would get a baby crib for all my future grandchildren, and I would put all the emblems on from 1926 so that the child would wake up every morning and become an automatic Blackhawks fan.
Wow.
I don't want any question. Yeah, I don't care where they're going to live. They are going to be a Blackhawks fan.
There's a couple members of the Hawks that are so young that they were in a crib just a few years ago.
They could come and hang out at my house.
Sure. All right.
Overnight, and they'd feel comfortable.
I bet
that's a great idea.
Your make-believe grandchild has a better beard than Jonathan Taves.
Well, if he's like his grandfather, yes, it will be.
All right, hang on a second, Beth. You're in the running. These are some great creative ideas, Bill.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Cindy, what's yours?
I'm buying the picnic basket. It has a blanket, plate, silverware, and tumblers.
A picnic basket that has all Blackhawks-related items inside.
Yes.
All right.
Beautiful.
It exists.
It does.
A Picnicolas Chalmerson, would you call it that?
Oh, yeah, that sounds
all right.
All right, Cindy, hang on. So you helped her. See how we do
things? I would take half of Cindy's if she wins.
All right, and I think we have two more here. Dave is on the line. Hi, Dave.
Greetings and salutations. I would get anything my sister would want from the Blackhawks store because she's my de facto caretaker. I'm disabled, and she has to do all kinds of stuff for me, you know, some of it kind of like. But so I would just say, you know, get her whatever, you know, if she whatever the amount she could get with that certificate, just let her have at it. She's a rabid Blackhawks fan.
Aww.
And just,
you are sweet,
what a
Dave.
Kind person, Dave.
Well, I try. I mean, like I say, I can't do much, but I'm good at getting through a call-in program, so I figure use my powers for good.
It worked. We're
all
glad
right.
you did. All
Hang
right.
on.
Thanks,
He's,
Dave.
See, some of these are more creative than others, but some of them are nicer than
right.
others.
Right. Sure.
So, all right.
You don't think the Blackhawks jockstrap was nice?
Oh, sure. I'm wearing one right now. Hi, Sue.
Hi.
Hi, Sue. Sue, what have you got? $100 at the Blackhawks store to buy what with it? What would you get?
Okay, I'm not as inventive as all these other people, but I would like a cookie jar for my woman's cave.
Oh. I didn't know there were women's caves. There is?
It's called a house.
Man, a man cave? I got a woman's cave.
Oh. I'm pondering that, and I'm blushing at the same time.
All right. Sue, hang on a minute. I, of course, would get the Blackhawks playoff bra, which I still don't know if I should wear Wednesday. We have to discuss this tomorrow.
All right.
But these were all pretty darned creative, so how do we decide?
Well,
creative and or nice.
Here's what I've done. I've put most of the finalists, the ones that you and Kevin and I seem to have liked, in a separate pile. I took off pieces of paper, so why don't we just juggle these up, and we'll come back
fair.
And pick one, don't you think?
Yeah.
I've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I've got 6 finalists. I'm not going to say who they are, but the ones that seem to either tug at our heartstrings or were the most creative, those are in the pile. So we'll just pick one of these at random, and they will be the winner.
All right. Take a quick break. We'll come back, and we'll figure this out.
Someone
and then,
will have a $100 gift card to the Blackhawk store.
And there are 4 locations, Chicago, Oak Brook, Old Orchard, and the United Center. And, of course, we have the Village of Bedford Park to thank for this. It's Bill and Wendy, 720 WGN. Here come the Hawks. We should have Shatner do this. Here come the Hawks.
He would bring a dramatic flair to it that no one else could ever match.
How about the Shattenkirk? It's like you've got Shat and Kirk.
Right.
Isn't that weird on the Blues?
It's a combination of William Shatner's name
and James Tiberius Kirk.
Wow, we even got the middle one. Very nice. Very impressive. We have a tremendous prize to give away, a $100 gift card to the Blackhawk store, 4 great locations. All you had to do was come up with a product that they would sell at the Blackhawk store that you would want, something that they don't actually have yet, but maybe in the future they will.
And we really appreciated everyone's contributions. Some of them more creative than others, but some of them nicer than others. So we put their names in a hopper. And Dennis Hopper,
we did, and he was furious.
And I think we've chosen our winner randomly. Greg, why don't you give us your idea again that you were going to purchase at the Blackhawk store?
Oh, outstanding. Sure. It was a Blackhawks hat with 88 on it for Patrick Kane with the fake mullet going for a mullet mojo, like you said.
Already built into the hat.
Kind of like the fake Bob Marley hair hat.
Right.
You know, this would be the Patrick Kane mullet hat.
Right.
Greg, I hope they have it at the Blackhawks store because you've got a $100 gift card. Locations in Chicago, Oak Brook, Old Orchard, and the United Center. Which one are you going to?
Oak Brook.
All right. This is Compliments of Village of Bedford Park, helping you gear up for the playoffs with new Blackhawk swag. Village of Bedford Park, think about relocating your business for success. Congratulations, Greg. Hang on.
Oh, thank you so much. And thanks for all your entertainment.